Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
We are continuing to follow a story from within our own newsroom here at NPR. As we reported earlier this week, NPR's top editor, Mike Oreskes, resigned following accusations of sexual harassment. Now NPR CEO Yarl Mohn has told the network staff that he let them down in how he handled concerns about Oreskes' behavior toward women. NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik has been covering this. Hi, David.
Hey, David.
So I know we all got a memo from Yarl, our CEO, saying that he let people down in how he reacted to all of this. Just take us through how he has handled the concerns inside our newsroom.
Well, initially he said, you know, there were a lot of things that were being done behind the scenes that we couldn't talk about because personnel decisions are confidential, that he had been, of course, reprimanded Mike Oreskes, our former news chief, back in 2015, but other concerns were taken into account. Now, Yarl's simply saying that he should have acted more precipitously to protect the culture here. He's called for an all-staff today where he'll take any question from folks in the newsroom about their concerns. He's saying, you know, work with me, let's fix what's wrong in our culture to make it the welcoming place it should be. He's also commissioned an outside review by a law firm of how Oreskes's concerns about Oreskes were handled, and that they'll be reporting back, I guess, to the board.
Well, you know, we have a board of directors at NPR. I'm, you know, obviously involved in following all of this. How were decisions reached in this case, David? And was the board involved, aware?
Well, so what we've previously known is that there were three, in a sense, complaints. One was from a younger junior colleague in 2015 of an incident not of great severity but of real concern, and he was reprimanded after that. Then a woman came forward in October 2015 to say that he had forcibly kissed her against her will almost two decades ago at the New York Times, and that was in October 2016, and then this past October, another woman came forward, a second woman, to say that she too had been kissed against her will when Oreskes was Washington bureau chief at the New York Times. And at that point, Mohn informed the chairman and the vice chairman of the board of directors of NPR of this concern and of the earlier reprimand. And the full board was notified, I'm told, on the afternoon of this Halloween, on Tuesday afternoon, which of course was after as the Washington Post was reporting about the two women's concerns from nearly two decades ago.
Well, and David, speaking of timing here, you have been reporting that NPR, the network, may have gotten a warning about Mike Oreskes a while ago. Can you talk about the timing of that?
So let's go back more than a year to the very end of September 2016. I'm told two veteran editors did go to management. Both went to HR. One also went to a lawyer. The other also went to a senior news executive and said that culture within the newsroom is toxic. People are very concerned about Mike's behavior towards women. There had been, I think, a lot of gossip about the complaint filed in 2015 I mentioned, but also concerns that perhaps there had been others. Lack of knowledge, lack of specificity, but you know, one of them very directly said, according to what they told me, that he had lost his ability to lead the newsroom, that his leadership had been compromised because of this question of his behavior towards women.
All right, that's NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. David, thanks.
I let you down. I should have acted faster and more decisively. The words of NPR CEO Yoram Mohn in an email to our newsroom. He met with NPR staff this afternoon, 2 days after he asked for the resignation of Senior Vice President for News Michael Oreskes. Oreskes's resignation came after allegations emerged of sexual harassment that occurred 2 decades ago and before his time at NPR. NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik has been covering this story. He joins me from New York. Hi, David.
Mary Louise.
So in the interest of being transparent about how we are covering this story, that all-staff meeting was off the record in the interest of women being able to tell their stories and share freely. I went. You chose not to. What have you been able to learn about it?
It was a tough, contentious meeting. Yoram Mohn was contrite and far more concrete about what he acknowledges now are failing to heed early warning signs about Mike Oreskes' behavior toward women. A number of female employees in particular voiced great skepticism about his ability to be the one to reshape and reform NPR, and he said he pledged to work very hard to regain their trust.
Now, the timeline of what exactly NPR management knew and when has shifted some as the story has unfolded this week. Can you remind us just what we knew a couple of days ago when Oreskes was forced out and then what you've learned since?
Sure. An assistant producer first filed a complaint against Mike Oreskes in October of 2015. He was formally rebuked after that for a long dinner that delved into the personal affairs. In late September 2016, two veteran editors said that the concerns over Mike's behavior towards women had created a toxic workplace. And then there were these two accusations that came in from women who had encounters with him when he was Washington bureau chief for the New York Times almost 2 decades ago. The first woman came in October of 2016. The second came in last month, October 2017. At that point, NPR started to look into it more carefully, but only took action to suspend him once it had been published in the Washington Post.
And you've continued to talk to women who are reporting inappropriate behavior on the part of Oreskes, but who have not necessarily taken it to a formal complaint.
Yes, and I think there have been about a half dozen women, five or six, who have made formal complaints since all this news broke. But there are a number of other women who have talked to me, people who work at NPR, a woman who used to work at NPR, a number of women who are thinking about working for NPR after Oreskes had offered them some career counsel and he had encouraged them to do so. There was the use of social media to sort of start conversations on a friendly or professional basis, and quickly they veered into the romantic, wistful, laudatory, and even sexual. And there seemed to be a grooming of women, that sort of a familiarity, but also a sense of expanding the boundaries of what's appropriate to allow himself to get entangled with them in ways that they simply did not want.
I want people to know that we have reached out. You have reached out to Mike Oreskes himself. He has thus far not commented to NPR other than a statement that went out to staff saying he is sorry and he apologizes for behavior that was inappropriate. In terms of where this goes next, Yoram Mohn, the NPR CEO, has announced that he's going to bring in an outside law firm to investigate how all this was handled. What exactly are we looking for there?
Well, we're going to see what they come up with. We're also going to see how public their findings become. And we're going to see how the board reacts to it. And there's one other thing. There's something intangible that's not necessarily formal, but we're going to see how the newsroom reacts and how the company reacts and whether or not Mohn can steady the state of ship for himself or whether or not he's really lost the ability to lead given his handling of the senior executive and his misbehavior towards the women who work for him.
NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik, thanks for that and for your reporting all this week.
You bet.
Sexual harassment training clearly isn't working. As more victims speak out, employers, including NPR, are having to confront the failure of these systems. NPR's Yuki Noguchi looks at why they haven't worked and some more radical solutions.
Many employers require sexual harassment training. Most often, it consists of online courses, such as this one, which NPR requires of its employees.
The conduct must be unwelcome and also either severe or pervasive.
Employees really can zone out and not even pay attention to the training.
Patricia Wise is an employment attorney who also served on the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's Task Force on Harassment. She says the primary reason most harassment training fails is that both managers and workers regard it as a pro forma exercise aimed at simply limiting the employer's legal liability.
You know, we've been checking the box for decades.
In its report on harassment last year, the EEOC admitted, flat out, that the last 3 decades of sexual harassment training haven't worked. Wise advocates face-to-face classes with realistic role play. But, she says, few companies want to spend the money and employee time because it hasn't been a priority. Also, Wise says, effectiveness is hard to measure, and companies have little incentive to study it.
if a researcher comes to your workplace to evaluate your training and the result is that your training is entirely ineffective, you've basically just developed evidence against yourself.
Elaine Herskowitz agrees. She wrote some of the EEOC's first policies on sexual harassment 3 decades ago. Now, as a consultant, she investigates harassment allegations and sees common pitfalls.
Maybe obvious, but it's critical that everyone in the organization undergo training all the way up to the top.
But Herskowitz says employers often exempt their leaders, creating the kind of double standard that leads to abuse of power. NPR, for example, requires sexual harassment training for all employees and managers. But the company says former NPR top news editor Michael Oreskes, who was fired recently amid mounting sexual harassment claims, did not complete his. Would training stop most incidents? Herskowitz admits she's skeptical.
I'm sorry. You have to know that you cannot just grab another person and kiss them without their consent.
Since nothing else has worked, the city of Chicago last month decided to put matters, quite literally, in workers' hands. The city's new law requires hotel employers to outfit their housekeeping staff with panic buttons. Karen Kent is president of the Unite Here One Hospitality Workers Union, who lobbied for the law after her union survey of female housekeepers showed half of them experienced sexual harassment, often from guests.
I'm ashamed that I did not know how widespread the problem was. Some of our hotels are a city block. They work in isolation. They're in these rooms. There's a power imbalance.
Herskowitz, the workplace consultant, says even today, harassment often goes unreported.
The most common employee responses are to ignore the harassment and to endure it, to hope it will stop. And part of the reason is fear of retaliation.
She says she sees victims making public allegations as similar to the panic button. They're demanding immediate attention and sending a message that the existing system is not working. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, November 9th, 2017. So I have been told this is our weekly broadcast on workplace racism, specifically looking for ways that non-white people, victims of white supremacy, can neutralize the variety of racist attacks that occur on the job. And that is whether you are what they call self-employed, if you work from home, whatever it is, I contend white supremacy racism will be a problem for you regardless of your chosen career path, or even the stage of your career. If you have figured out, as I say consistently, if you have got yourself in a great position where you are not being mistreated, you get all of your raises, you get all of your promotions. If you need a transfer, you get it. You get all your vacation time as per requested. No questions asked. You get phenomenal performance reviews. No one accuses you of being aloof, too quiet, not talking enough. If you're in that position, please, you should be one of the first folks to dial in the number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Star 6-1 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you have problems, any sort of difficulties, and you would like counter-racist suggestions, if you want to just kind of share what's going on and see what some of the listeners think in terms of ways of going about trying to resolve your situation, maybe even a different way of thinking about your situation, as always, dial in the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 6-1 if you would like to participate. Press star 6-1 if you would like to participate. Share the broadcast. Let other black people, victims of racism, let them know workplace racism is broadcasting. You can share it on social media. That's always grand. And letting other black people, if you hear a black person who's having problems on the job sounds like something that could be related to racism. Even if you just hear a black person who's having difficulties on the job, period, maybe it doesn't sound like it's something related directly to racism, suggest that they check out the workplace racism segment, even if just to listen. I think if there are constructive tips being given out, if there's info that is helpful, it might benefit other black people, other victims of racism, to hear, listen to, even be encouraged to participate in workplace racism. Make sure you share. Again, this is not a spectator broadcast. Cannot emphasize that enough. There should be a myriad of entertainment options. If you are just looking for something to do for a few, a little bit of chunk of your Thursday evening, this broadcast is not just something for folks to dial in to hear about black people and their trials and tribulations on the job. This is about participating. I think if you are a black person anywhere in the world, if you have a job, if you have had a job, whether you work for yourself or not, I strongly suspect that white supremacy racism has been a problem for you on the job. Even if it's reflecting on your work experience, I strongly suspect that a whole lot of us, we take a good look at our work history. There are going to be some things that happened where we might say, man, at the time that happened, I didn't think of it as an illustration of white supremacy. But having the understanding that I have now, I see the dynamics of racism. That can be helpful, too. So make sure we're reflecting on our workplace experience and just being observant about things that are happening to us on the job right now. You can always email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com if you have something that you want to share with listeners. I can keep it anonymous if you have concerns about, you know, being identified on the broadcast. And updates, forgot that as well. It's helpful for me, and other listeners have said so as well. If you dial in and, you know, you share an experience, you figured out something great, or if you've had problems, if you could give us an update, that is always helpful. I know a lot of us, myself included, we're trying to get better in terms of understanding counter-racist techniques, particularly as they can be applied on the job. So if you dial in, you share a situation, even if you don't, you know, take any of the strategies that are offered on the broadcast, just let us know how things proceed, because that's helpful. Lets us know what things are successful, what things might have proven to be helpful for some black people on the job. And if it's not, if it does not work out as well, that's good to know as also. And even, you know, specifics about how things unfolded as you applied, you know, different techniques or whatever you tried to neutralize things on the job. Just give us an update. Let us know. And folks are generally concerned. I think a lot of listeners often, they really hope, you know, that people are able to solve some of the problems that we face on the job. I know a lot of us have experienced a lot of the same type of difficulty. So I think there's also genuine concern and hoping that, you know, people are able to resolve their situation in a satisfactory manner. Okay. Things I wanted to touch on before I get to some of the callers. There was, or even before I get to something else, the audio that we heard at the beginning last week, I played the segments from NPR where they were talking about all the sexual harassment allegations, and then even the own white editor of their newsroom that they he resigned. Again, I talked about it last week. He wasn't fired. He resigned. But that was at NPR, and they continued this week talking about it, and people being upset about the way that this was handled and how information was passed along and whether or not this person should have been disciplined or why they were allowed to stay on for so long, and even the efficacy of the trainings about sexual harassment that reminded me a lot of sensitivity training, where white people a lot of times make a lot of money to come in and do these consulting programs where maybe it's a day, sometimes it lasts days, where people have made whole careers out of this, and it's not effective at all. As soon as they finish the sensitivity training, they go right back to telling nigger jokes. As soon as they finish the sexual harassment training, they go right back to raping and making lewd comments and all the rest of it. The thing that stood out for me more than anything, if this is not effective, in my view, it would be more about making sure that, number one, I'm very alert and not naive that This sort of thing is extraordinarily widespread, males and females being victims of this unwanted touching, sexual harassment, especially if we're talking about a workplace situation, being aware that this happens and then already having a code for how you want to respond to deal with this. And then policy aspect of it. That's something that we talk about on the program all the time in terms of what can you do to get the white people on your job to make sure that, hey, we're going to at least make sure that we have a safe working environment where people are not being touched. Whatever that is, if I have to, you know, say something in a group meeting or making sure I'm not alone with this person, already having a code in place that, hey, I already know I am in an environment with predators. And I am going to be on guard on a regular basis. They were talking about the new technology and having the panic alert system and all that. I suspect it might be a while before a lot of people have that in their workplace situation. I think what I've been saying consistently as well, use all of this attention. They're talking about Louis C.K. today as well. That got reported a few hours before we went on, that he also is now being accused of making lewd behavior with other female employees, and he's lost a job or whatever it is. I would use all of this attention. Anybody, if you're on a job, if it's unwanted touching, if it's comments, anything that even sounds remotely like something that could be considered inappropriate and of a sexual nature, I would be looking for tie-ins. I would be mentioning Harvey Weinstein and now Louis C.K. because he's a prominent big name people. I would be mentioning these folks. Say something about the training. I would be trying to say it out loud just to get the problem addressed and so that people can hear and see you being serious about this is a problem and this is not something that I'm going to be quiet about at all. That can be huge, just people seeing your demeanor of being a serious person. Now, other things that I wanted to make sure I addressed. There was a report just this week, a few days ago, about an incident of workplace racism. Let's see, this was reported. We had people that wrote in as well. I'll read their commentary as we proceed. This was reported two days ago. Black male loses a job after reporting an act of what they call bigotry, white supremacy, racism. I'm just reading from the report. A Kennedy Heights man is claiming in a lawsuit that he was fired by a Batavia company after repeatedly complaining about a racially offensive comment written on a toilet paper dispenser in a factory bathroom. The suit was filed last month in U.S. District Court in Cincinnati by Justin Evigan, who is black. Evigan alleges that Millicron Plastics Technologies Group plant manager Tom McDonald and three other employees engaged in race discrimination and retaliation around his firing. Evigan states that he was in a bathroom stall in August 2016 when he saw "Kill the niggers," in quotes, written on the toilet paper dispenser. Elsewhere in the stall, he claims, was an image of former President Obama riding a pig with a quote bubble saying "Allahu Akbar," or Arabic for God is great. Above Obama was a group of balloons tied together by a noose. Evigan said he reported the graffiti to his supervisor, who told him it had been removed. It wasn't. Evigan says so he took a picture of the phrase and showed it to his supervisor, and this time, McDonald says he was told it would be investigated. When the phrase still hadn't been removed, Evigan posted the picture on his Facebook page on August 23rd, along with his comment, "This is what I have to deal with at my job. I told my foreman 2 weeks ago about this, and look, I bet if I put something up about another race, it would be off the next day. Hashtag racism is still real." Evigan says he was fired November 1st and that the phrase still hadn't been removed the day prior to his dismissal. They claim they fired him for a different Facebook Live post about how hostile the work environment was, says Evigan's lawyer, Brian Butler of Cincinnati. It depicted machines in the background, and the company says it violated their proprietary information policy. Evigan states he was originally hired by Milacron as an electrician in February 2016. Butler says Evigan has not found steady work since his firing. The lawsuit asks for unspecified financial damages and job reinstatement. Milacron spokesman Michael Ellis says the company does not comment on pending lawsuits, but says Milacron does not condone the kind of behavior described in the lawsuit. Milacron is committed to a fair workplace that is free from sexual, racial, or other unlawful harassment and from threats or acts of violence or physical intimidation, Ellis says. End of the report. This is at citybeat.com. The name of the report, Losing a Job After Reporting an Act of Bigotry. And one talk about words consistently. I've said consistently for workplace racism, any incident of mistreatment, you're not complaining. This broadcast is not complaining about what has been done to us on the job. You are reporting mistreatment. You are reporting violation of conduct, violation of policy and procedure, possible subversion. That's what you're doing, not complaining. And they will try and consistently frame any allegations of this nature as, oh, this is a gripe. This is a grievance. This is a complaint. In my view, that's just a way of minimizing white terrorism, to just make it sound like you have some sort of childish grievance and you just can't get along with people on the job. That's not what it is at all. The other thing with this incident, I think we talked about social media a lot with, you know, new century, new technology. Dr. Kamban, I think, has encouraged for a long time not even having social media, saying that that could cause a lot of problems in the workplace, either keeping you from getting employed or, in this case, causing a person to be terminated allegedly. I would be very, very mindful of social media in terms of having it in your own name. Do you want to use it? I don't think I would encourage or promote posting social media or posting things, images and what have you, of your job to your social media or a situation like this. Phenomenal. Get pictures of all of it. Obama on the pig, the noose, kill the niggers, all of it. Many pictures documented. Put it in your dossier. We talk about that all the time. But I don't know if that's the sort of thing that you want to have on your Twitter page immediately. It might bring attention. Maybe, maybe not. I would... White people spy me. We talked about that on the program last week. That's something that I emphasize a lot. If you got social media, white people are going to be looking at your posts, your coworkers. They're going to be looking at your posts, especially if you've made some sort of allegation or charge about racism, white supremacy. All it takes is one person, one white person on your job that you think you're cool with. One white person on the job that, oh, you know, Ted, Jane, we've been friends, we have lunch together, and this person is, you know, follows me on Twitter. They know my Instagram, they know my Facebook or whatever it is. They follow, they see I posted this. Racism is real on the job. Look at this. They got Obama riding a pig and everything, chitlins around his neck in the form of a noose. And they say, oh man, oh, wait till I share. They just pass it right down, and then they coordinate, network. It sounds like that's what happened in this situation. He made the post on social media. They were probably watching his account. Oh, yeah, we're going to get rid of this nigger. Oh, yeah. Kill them all. If we can't kill him here, we'll at least fire him and get him out of here. It sounds like the ongoing disruptions. Mr. Fuller talked about that in some of the audio I was playing before we went live. That is the plan. Harass, terrorize, they get you out of the job. And then this happened last summer with the noose and then him being terminated. It's been a year of instability. Not able to find steady employment here, there, moving around. A year. That is the exact plan they have for Black people. Again, not being surprised in this program, just being about dealing with this sort of thing. We've had listeners who've called in before where they have had people posting, you know, this sort of commentary in the bathroom. We've had construction workers and people in different sites who've written in and had photographic evidence of the same type of behavior. And in fact, some of the people who dealt with this sort of situation, they took photographs. They didn't post them on social media. They did go back and ask, presented their photographic evidence, you know, of what the problem was. Same thing was reported, that they were real sluggish about getting this stuff down. And, oh, we got other stuff to do. And I got arthritis. I don't know. We might have to get extra laborers to go in and do the scrubbing to get it down. And I don't know, lots of excuses about why it took so long and everything else, but not losing your cool, thinking it might even be some of the people that you're going to talk to who put this up in the first place and how you go about dealing with these type of situations. If the person who I think he emailed, I don't know if he called in or not, but I know he emailed, I have the photographs of a situation that was very similar to this. If you want to dial in, share commentary on how you dealt with this situation, what you did to kind of neutralize the situation, because I think they at least did get it to where it wasn't happening as much anymore. But I think it was really aggressive about the same time last year. It was the election cycle, and I think some Trump paraphernalia was being brought in and all of that. If that person specifically is with us and you want to dial in, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. If other folks, if you have either your own situation, certainly if you figured out some things that work well, share. If you are having a problem of some sort, that is always welcome. Dial in. And if we have folks who have just comments about this sort of situation, because this is very, very common, terroristic graffiti in the bathrooms and what have you. I think a lot of colleges and universities have had this sort of thing, construction sites, other places of employment, very, very common type of scenario. This is one that, you know, I think is common enough that there should just be a basic code or a few different codes about how you can proceed, deal with this, solve the problem without creating new problems. Number again, 641-715-3640, code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary you would like to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to you, Gus. This is Ross, and I wanted to chime in on the clip that you played, because I think that that was extremely important. I like what you had pointed out in the clip. I think that that was very, very well stated and spoken on. One thing that I found to be extremely important in that clip as well, and I'm thinking I might not have been the only one, you might have seen it or listened or heard it too, was when they said that companies do not measure the success of these programs because it'll be a way of working against their own best interests. Because if they say, yes, this program's not working, if someone comes forward to take legal action based on a situation of sexual harassment, they could use the evidence of that company stating, we vetted this particular practice and we find that it's completely ineffective. You know, we still have the same problems we had before we had these sexual harassment seminars on the job. So to me, the importance of that is they're telling you the system is set up to protect the plantation owners and the people who run the plantation, because the whole purpose of having sexual harassment seminars and making people fill out forms is to hopefully prevent that. But they stated it pretty emphatically that none of this stuff is working, and that the companies themselves don't want to do anything about it for fear of being liable. So this is a self-fulfilling prophecy of white supremacy, where you would never be able to really do anything about it. And with that particular aspect of the way that they have set up their legal protection mechanisms within the company. So the importance of what you were discussing as far as documenting, you know, even with the images in the bathroom, just having a record of those things could not be overstated, simply because every company you work in is basically working against you if something like that happens to you, in order to protect themselves from being legally liable in a way where they could get sued to the point where the company folds. So I think that that's something we really need to pay attention to, because that just shows you that in specifically the area of labor, that within the DNA of how the companies function is white supremacy and protective mechanisms against victims trying to facilitate resolution when these types of things happen. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
Absolutely. Very important. I think folks have talked about that, you know, with human resources and what have you, understanding that they are about protecting the company, the white-owned company, not you and your rights as a worker, and to understand that so that you, everything that you are doing and thinking, your code has to be about how you're going to protect yourself and your interests with the company or wherever you happen to be working at. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, you had either commentary on what either the clip, the NPR clip that was talking about sexual harassment and how ineffective their programs and what have you have been, if you had your own situation you wanted to discuss, or if you had comments, suggestions around how to deal with that sort of graffiti, that incident that came up, the black male that was fired for just posting pictures of how he's being terrorized on his job. Proceed.
Hello, may I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, this is Red in Nevada. And just quickly about just the graffiti on the bathroom wall. I know I shared a story a while back where I had a male friend who was a construction worker, and he encountered some of that same thing, except for it was actually really personalized to him and speaking about, you know, his genitals. And it was basically an all-male site with white men. So, but with him, he just basically kind of just, he would self-medicate to kind of get through it. So I definitely don't advise that approach. But I do agree with Gus how, you know, just take pictures, and also just maybe that would help if you did want to pursue legal action. Just real quick on me, today I had tried to sign up for basically like a temporary employment type of thing, and somehow, and of course they couldn't actually tell me how, but I was waiting. There was a bunch of people in the lobby, and of course my name somehow just got misplaced or got out of queue, and nothing was ever like said to me until I started noticing that other people who came in after me were starting to be taken to go back to the office and, you know, kind of speak about the employment. Luckily, because I actually wasn't paying attention that closely, it was my little sister was there with me, and so she reminded me. So I just, you know, just saying that, just making sure that we are definitely very mindful, even when it comes to the application process or having to, you know, go to any type of employment office or anything like that. Just make sure that maybe even to double check that they have your correct information. Apparently, the female, and it was she looked like a non-white female, did apparently have the information, but still, of course, I was misplaced. The last thing I wanted to share was just actually an example of my mother showing black self-respect. I feel like it is. I've spoken about her with her being in a supervisor/manager type of position, and I've spoken about how she had told me there was her company does fire people if you're in the probationary period and you are late so many times or you call off what have you. So today my mother had actually took the time out and contacted an employee outside of work just to remind the non-white employee, who's a black female, that, you know, if you are late again, they will fire you without hesitation. This is something that, you know, they have discussed. So if you decide to kind of take that approach, I definitely think that that will be helpful to other black people. That's all I wanted to share this week. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Right on, mommy. That is awesome. We talked about that before in terms of sharing information with black people on the job. But that is grand. That's something I don't think that's too much of a risk. I don't think you would be in jeopardy of losing your job or getting in trouble just telling other folks, be timely. Looks like they might be letting folks go. Be timely. Outstanding for mom, black self-respect. I agree with that emphatically. With your temporary situation, I think Reveal, it's a podcast on iTunes and I guess other platforms as well. But I think they did like a whole two segments, like about 2 hours worth of broadcasting on lawsuits against temporary agencies doing the exact same type of thing where the black people just don't get hired for these jobs. They same Dr. Welsing, the late Grandcestor, Dr. Francis Cresswell-Elsing, Black Get Back, Brown Stick Around, White Is Right. Exact same thing was playing out in these temp agencies, and these were like major lawsuits. This was just wasn't just a one day or one time thing. This was widespread of Black people not getting jobs, and the white people would get jobs, and the non-Black, non-white people would get jobs. The Black people would just be piled up waiting. That is, you know, consistent. Just one of the myriads of different ways that, you know, we get exploited in the workplace, whether you get the job, don't get the job, widespread. Those suggestions in terms of the, I guess, the bathroom type thing, or graffiti, wherever it happens to be, if it's the bathroom or just randomly in the workplace taking pictures, big one. I'm a huge advocate of that. If you do want to go the legal route, even that can be difficult. With this situation, I think it's been the situation that I read about that started last year. It looks like that's going on to be in a 2-year situation still with no resolution for this Black person who's had basically a year and a half of very tenuous employment circumstances to deal with. So even if you go the legal route, it's no guarantee that that's going to be any better. Certainly no guarantee that it's going to be easy or efficient. But I'm a big advocate of taking pictures. I think Mr. Fuller also a big advocate of framing that as subversion, not even going in with this is an act of racism, or I think, you know, Bob or Jim or trying to call out someone specifically, because a lot of times you don't know who did it. So it's not even trying to go after a person specifically. But I think this could be an act of subversion and branding it that this is a constitutional violation. I think Mr. Fuller is a big advocate of approaching the situation that way so that it's not personal. And that shifts their analysis, meaning the white people that are on the job that you're going to be talking to. It shifts from them taking this as, oh, this is just a little personal grievance and this hurts your feeling, to, oh, okay, this person is being very serious about how they proceed with this. They're not going to let us just try to minimize this to some sort of little grade school argument, and we're going to have to be more serious in how we deal with this situation. We might even have to be a little more serious about minimizing, you know, how much of this stuff we're allowed to do on the job. Could even go that route if they see you're being serious and how you're going to, you know, approach, and not flying off the handle, getting upset. I can't emphasize that enough. I was talking, Mr. Reed invited me to speak on his program for short period this week. They're doing the 10-year anniversary at Black Talk Radio Network, a decade of brilliant work from Mr. Reed and everyone else on the platform. But we were talking about workplace racism, and I emphasized all, out of all of the suggestions in terms of how you deal with the situation on the job, I wouldn't care what it is, the number one suggestion, not losing your cool. When you have a situation like this happen, whatever, if you're going to contact an attorney, if you're just going to compile this, if you're going to go to human resources yourself, if you just take a picture and decide I'm not going to do anything, you know, I don't care what they do as long as they don't put their hands on me and my compensation is correct, I don't care about this. I just, you know, take photographs. That doesn't bother me at all. Whatever your code is, you cannot allow that to make you emotional. You cannot have it be where you get upset and you go running out and cursing at somebody. You think John did this. You think Susan did this. You're going to go run and, you know, give her a piece of your mind and curse her out or what have you. I would even say you cannot just run and take a picture and run and post it on social media and just be like, yeah, these are the racists that I work with on the job and what have you. I mean, you really got to be strategic with regards to how we deal with things on the job. And when I say being strategic, so that this problem does not become 1, 5, 10 other problems as a result of how you responded to that, to any sort of situation on the job. Hope being clear about that. If other folks have commentary they want to share that situation, if you have your own situation that you want to share about, or if you have figured out some things that work well, we always need folks who have figured out some strategies that get you those raises, get you those promotions. If we have anybody in that position, please feel free to chime in, *61, if you have commentary. Could have spectators for a moment. We'll have to check on that. I always give my side eye when I see a lot of Black people, even if it's 3 Black people, but to have more than that and folks being a little quiet with workplace racism, unless we have lots of folks who are independently wealthy. They have huge endowments and they just don't have to work, so they don't have any of these problems. That is the case. Grand, invest in the cows. If not, hopefully we will not have spectators. Folks can, you know, take a second, share what's experiencing in the workplace. While we're waiting, one of the folks who wrote in, our young scholar in the Bay Area, he's written for a while. I know Thomas in New York said he had a question for our Bay Area scholar. I don't know if he's listening live with us, but Thomas in New York did have a question for you, sir. He wrote in, he said, in our Black Student Union meeting, and for folks who, if you have newer listeners, our Bay Area scholar, he is about 15 years old, high school student, California. He's been writing in for a minute, over the year, I think. In our Black Student Union meeting last week, we discussed how something called microaggressions are used in societies to this very day. For those who don't know, a microaggression involves a statement where one person relays a compliment towards another person, but that compliment is meant to be more of an insult. For example, if a white person were to tell me that I'm very intelligent for a black guy, or even if another white person asks to touch my hair, these are microaggressions. I consider them to be used more by white people towards black people in a general sense, but I've learned that these terms can be used in any setting, even if it's directed towards a female or other person of color. These are only meant to signify that the person being told the microaggression is meant to feel as if they are out of place or even unwelcome in a particular setting. That is all I wanted to share. Our young caller in the Bay Area, that is even that term I've shared before in the program. I do not use that term and recommend that other non-white people not use that term. Just in my view, it's still minimizing, the same type of logic that I used in explaining why workplace setting, these are not complaints. These are not grievances. I am reporting possible subversion. I am reporting incorrect activity, a violation of policy and procedure. That's the type of language that you want to use. Same thing. Racists are very good at minimizing their own acts of terrorism, their own pathology directed at black people. And so they'll use a term like microaggression, micro, small, not widespread global terrorism against billions of black people, non-white people worldwide. No, we don't want to use language of that nature. So these are microaggressions. And even in the definition, this is a microaggression that is a compliment. That's really an insult. I mean, that's no, I just don't think that's the most accurate way of describing white terrorism, in my view. But yeah, great analysis from our young scholar in detailing what they are teaching, explaining in the classroom. If anything, I would say that's another illustration, great reason why you want to be talking to your children. I had that in my notes this week to ask if what black parents are relaying to their black children about the workplace. Are you having conversations with them, particularly if you have teens who might be going to the workplace sometime soon? Are you having conversations with them? What are you telling them? I don't remember my parents telling me a whole lot about what to expect, what to do, what not to do, what to say in the workplace. That was something that I was going to ask. But yeah, the school situation and this sort of dialogue, they are talking to them about these problems and giving out their own definitions and terms about how to think about these issues. We should be doing the same as parents. Anywho, other folks, if they have commentary, unless folks are still spectating, other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, suggestions, your own situation you would like to share, feel free. The number again, 641-715-3640, and the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I guess the person that's on a headset, I guess.
Hey. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how's it going, everyone?
Right.
Kita, I just wanted to call in. And one thing I noticed when I'm at work is that the suspected racists, they have a great time talking about alcohol. Now, when I say they talk about alcohol, it seems like their life revolves around alcohol. And I have quite a few coworkers that actually make beer, alcohol, in their houses. And they talk about it, as a matter of fact, a lot about how they set up the beer, what they use. One of my teammates actually went to, went to a store to go get equipment for his beer, like his keg, like during lunchtime. And then he came back with it and showed it to me in the office. I was just so, I didn't have the words for it because how does your life revolve around alcohol like that? And then also, this is one time that really shocked me, and I didn't really process it till now. One of the people at my job, he makes beer as well through someone else. He actually came in to the office with about 12 bottles of homebrew beer sealed and just started handing them out to people in the office. And where I work, it's a corporate environment, degreed people, hard majors, quote unquote. And he's just handing out beer. It's crazy. But that's really all I had to say for that.
Appreciate that. I think we certainly have had many conversations over the years about white people and drugs, alcohol, the opioid epidemic, and all of that. I certainly still stick by sobriety would be best. And I've said I would just in the job, I would make it very clear that I'm all about sobriety. I wouldn't, I don't drink. No, thank you. That's great. I'm sure your homemade brew is outstanding, but try to keep it sober. Thank you kindly. And I would just observe. It's been my experience, those environments where people are talking about alcohol, sometimes they even are allowing alcoholic beverages on the premises. We've had a number of listeners over the years who, have said that they've had work environments where that sort of thing is all right. And they don't work at brothels, they're in some sort of office setting, but still the alcohol is tolerated. And I've been in some of those settings. I would say there you especially want to be alert, because it's just been my experience, the environments, the more lax they are about that type of policy and procedure where, hey, you can bring in whatever liquor you want and, you can share it on the job and whatever you brewed at home, and talking about liquor and alcohol all day long, that can mirror the attitude with other policies and how they are going to be enforced. And just my general rule, man, if you think racist men, racist women are tacky and trashy sober, oh man, you haven't seen anything until they are intoxicated. So I would just keep that in mind in terms of being very alert if that's what you see happening in the environment. And I think a lot of times too, a lot of black people get in trouble thinking that we can do what white people are doing on the job. I would feel very nervous as a black person coming in and handing out beer. I wouldn't care if I made it myself, if I bought it, handing out beers on the job. I would feel real nervous about that. That might be the sort of thing that, someone is taking notes about and we're going to have to talk about when it's time for my evaluation for a raise. That I don't know. That's not quite professional behavior. So even if that's your thing, if you are a connoisseur of alcohol and spirits and all of that, I wouldn't promote that on the job. I don't know that it'll have the same impact for you as a white person. I think it would be best for black people to just really make it clear that we're about sobriety, being serious on the job, and take that seriously. If you got white people that are doing all that, probably means you got a good number of white people who might be intoxicated on the job. That can allow for a lot of other problems. I would be very alert if that sort of thing is happening in your particular, workplace environment. Other folks have any thoughts, commentary on that one?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, greetings, Gus. I can speak to that. I worked in the insurance industry in New York City, and at my most recent job, I'm really stepping into the job market. I had some time off and had to deal with some things. But when I was there, they used to keep beer all over, like beer. They gave out Ciroc one time, little mini bottles of Ciroc, and they just constantly had alcoholic beverages. I remember when I first got there, people were drinking first thing in the morning. I mean, somebody might go and get a beer at like 8, it was just a constant flow of alcohol. And then after a while, they started realizing they had a bunch of white folks that were lushes or potentially even alcoholics. I would probably say that. And they ended up putting signs all over the company stating that the alcoholic beverages, you cannot drink them until maybe an hour before you leave or within 30 minutes before you leave. But you're not, they didn't want people drinking during the day unless, I guess, they thought it was okay. Like if you were in a meeting with someone and they said, okay, this person was a higher up or whatever. So I just made it clear I don't drink. I didn't go to any of their functions. I went to the one Christmas party. All the other functions I completely avoided. They have trips, company trips, all kinds of stuff. And therein, to me, lies something that I've said multiple times on this program in regards to walking into a job. If you're starting a new job, you start the job with your code. You don't walk in, you know, as Gus will say, aloof and thinking you got white buddies and these people are cool. You walk in with your code from day one. I remember when we had like a little meeting just to introduce ourselves to each other. You know, I made it clear I don't drink. You know, you're not going to see me drinking alcohol. That is not something I do. And I'm not here to be friends with any of you. I get paid to do a job. If I happen to make friends with someone while I'm here, that is a fringe benefit of me working in this company. But I don't come to the company assuming that I'm here to just be friends with everyone and we're just going to be telling our personal business. That is not the case. That is not the way I operate. So let's get that clear day one. And as long as you function within that code, and that code is unbreakable, every situation that you are around your coworkers, your behavior is impeccable in regards to that code that you established. There's no need for them to scrutinize you. But if you walk in and you're friends with everyone and, you know, you're going out to lunch with folks and you're telling them your personal business and you have your photographs of your family on the desk and your candy and all that other stuff, and then you start to understand the way the system functions and you call programs like this and we discuss having that code and you start to tighten up your code, that is when they'll be all over you, because white people are watching us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Even in moments where you think you're not being watched, you're being watched. I wouldn't even be surprised if you're being recorded. So any difference in behavior where you're going from being what they would consider to be friendly and non-aloof to being more reserved, quiet, having less to say, no longer have pictures on your desk, no longer talking about your personal business, they're going to see that as an issue. And that could potentially ruin your entire experience in that company, because as long as you're there, you're going to be under complete scrutiny. So that is, again, I think this is very important that the previous caller brought that up. Thank you. And again, I would just like to reiterate for people who are either just starting a job or potentially just got a job and they're about to start soon or looking for a job, please take time to develop a stringent code of behavior when on the job, around the job, near the job, with coworkers, all of that stuff, because it will protect you down the road when you start to experience acute or even subtle acts of white supremacy in regards to your response. There will not be scrutiny on you because you've already established a code that says you're not playing, you're serious, you're about the job, and that's really what it's all about for you. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, Roz. Absolutely. Much, much better if you have your code, or at least the remnants of your code. Certainly all of us, you make adjustments as you go, but you're in a much better position when you have that worked out when you start, as opposed to trying to figure it out, you know, on the fly, especially if you started out, you're all cool, no code, and then trying to develop like that is much, much more difficult. And certainly with the alcohol thing, just reminded me that this is, they call the holiday season. You certainly want to be alert and aware now that we're getting close to what they call Thanksgiving and all that. And these are the major ones, that jobs that they'll have parties for and maybe little outside of work gatherings that you might be required to attend. I would go ahead and be working on that code right now. If you're not going to participate, I would get my language together around how I'm going to decline. Is this going to be something where they go around and ask you to participate in some sort of gift exchange? Are they going to ask you to come to the company party? If you're not going to go, I would already get the verbiage there. If you're not required to be there, if this is the sort of thing where you're not going to accrue any penalties for your job, this isn't going to mess you up for getting a promotion or a raise, I wouldn't be there. if it's one of those jobs where you got to go, some of them it's required. Now, obviously, I mean, it's nothing to say if it's required, but for some of them, it's not required. But if you don't go, they will say, oh, it looks bad. It looks like you're not a team player, as they will say, or, you know, you can't get this raise or what have you. We've talked about that. You should have a code. I think going and staying for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, you're not alone. If you are married or if you have a sibling or a friend, hopefully someone who is a little bit less confused, you can take them. That way you have someone with you to help keep you safe. You got someone who can talk to you. You got another set of eyes to make sure that nothing untoward or dangerous is happening. And then it should be much easier to extricate. Either one of you could have an emergency that needs to be addressed. You go around, you shake a few hands. If it's a picture, what have you, you get in a selfie or two. Yep, I was there. Got my picture right there. You already put it on Instagram. See, right up next to the tree. Great. And then you get out. But you're codifying. You already think, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm not going to do. If you are going to attend, you're not consuming any alcohol. You're going to be sober the whole time that you're there. You chat it up and then you get out of there. But I would already be planning that sort of thing out. If you've been at your job over a year, you already know what the routine is going to look like from now to the end of the year. So you should be great. You should have a polished code for what you're going to do. If you've not been on the job, I think, Red, we got some other folks who, you know, switched, got new jobs. So if you're in a new environment, I would find at least one person and ask, what is the procedure? Is this a group where everybody gets nutty between now and the end of the year and they're going to demand that I eat, you know, every piece of cobbler that they bring in and turkey sandwiches and all this other nonsense? Is this what I'm going to have to deal with from now to January? Is this a subdued environment? Are they going to have a Christmas tree? Find out what you're going to have to deal with and codify so that that does not become something where you're awkward and stumbling and fumbling if they come in to ask you to come, you know, participate in all this madness. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, number again, 641-715-3640, code 564-943, pound, star 61 if you have commentary. Other folks dialed in? Still spectating, I presume. I will keep an eye out as folks, if they say they have commentary, things they would like to share. Again, if this is a symbol that things are going great for Cal's listeners on the job, bravo. Job well done. I would still say you should be looking out for other people on your job, because even if things are going great for you, I am certain that the white coworkers you are with, that they are not behaving, whether it relates to other black people that are there, even other white people that are there. That's been my experience. So definitely remain alert. Take notes. You can still be sharing things that have worked for you, but I'm pretty sure you're seeing some other interesting things on the job as well. Wow, folks, give folks a second to see if they have other commentary they want to make sure that they get in. Do we have folks, parents? Because I did think that was something that was significant. If we have parents, have you shared with your children? I think we do have some parents who have either teens or, you know, children that are at working age or close to working age. We have parents who have, you know, had conversations with their children with regards to workplace racism, what to look out for, what not to look out for, even allowing your child to work, how early you would allow your child to work. Have people worked out their workplace racism code for how they're going to transfer that on to their offspring yet? We have folks who are at that point yet.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. My son is in college right now. And recently, because he worked on campus, and not too long ago, I totally forgot about this. You triggered this memory with what you just said. But he was working with the head of his department for his major, and the head of his department had an issue with this female that came from a different location, white female, and because he did not like the way things went, mind you, this is a department head, so he's the top guy in that entire field of science that my son is studying, and he actually told my son to find out who her boss was so he could follow up with the boss and I guess try to reprimand this person that he felt he didn't have a rapport with, or something went negative with that person. So my son had come to me. Well, we've talked about racism on the campus, workplace racism. I give it to him, and I have for a while. So he came to me and asked. He said, you know, I really feel uncomfortable with this. You know, I don't even know why he would ask me. He's like, he's the head of the department. He can call and get all the information he wants, and he has the authority to ask. I'm just, you know, the guy working at the desk and assisting, you know, the department. So he just really, really felt uncomfortable. I said, well, one thing you want to remember is when you're dealing with white people, they will always try to put you as a black person, especially a less powerful black person, because now you're dealing with the dynamics of him being the head of the department, you being a student in that department, and the dynamic is no different than slave master slave or correction officer and a prisoner. There's a hierarchy there where you feel uncomfortable that if you don't go forward with what they requested, there might be a negative impact for you. It would be your grades. So I said, I totally understand. I said, this is how white people function. They'll have a situation they want to address. And if they can put a non-white person, specifically a black person, as the face of their request, then any negative repercussion goes to that person. You become a buffer. You're the buffer between the potential negative repercussions and the person who actually sent you to on this errand to do this. So I told him, I said, no. I said, I would not do it, and I would go tell him, you know, I'm not comfortable with that. If there's anything that you need to know, you know, I told him, I said, I just would not actually do it, and I would go about letting him know that it is not something that that you feel you are qualified to do in your position, and, you know, and just let him know, like, hey, you know, you're the head of the department. And he did that. He went and he told him, he explained it to him. He said, you know, I'm not comfortable doing this. You know, you are literally the head of the entire department. You have more authority to move forward if you feel that's necessary. I'm a nobody. Who am I to be questioning, you know? And he asked him to go ask the person. So he said, ask the person who he had the problem with who her boss was so that he could go address the boss. And it just didn't make sense. I said, racism, white supremacy. I said, anytime something does not make logical sense to you, anytime you're asked to do something that's illogical and you can't get a viable reason for it in your head where it makes sense, always go to white supremacy and you'll find your answer. And we found the answer in that. So when he went and explained it to him, everything actually worked out. He's known my son for a while now. My son is actually one of the top students in that department. So he's really well known. But he thanked me afterwards and said, you know, I wouldn't have known what to do. I said, well, the whole thing is we all learning. So the idea is that, you know, that can create anxiety, and that anxiety can cause you all kinds of stress issues, probably even medical problems if you allow it to. So I said, we always, you know, I said, anytime you have an issue, question, or whatever the case may be about a situation, ask me, you know, and I always tell you, be calm, you know, don't ever let anyone get you emotionally agitated to the point where you feel like you have to be reactionary. You always want to be thoughtful, logical, preemptive, and be very careful of the words you use when you're either speaking to someone or describing something to someone if you're forced to do so in a situation. So, again, I was able to have him successfully navigate that request. It turned out not to be a big deal. There were no negative repercussions for my son afterwards, but he felt really good being able to address it in a way in which he felt comfortable addressing it. And he understood that, okay, this is a direction that I can go in where I don't feel like I'm being combative or setting myself up to be messed with down the line by this white supremacist. So thank you. And I'll meet my line.
Appreciate that, Roz. Right on. Good. Man, I wish more parents. And again, you can only share what you know. And I think racists, they've done a pretty good job of disrupting it, or at least making it difficult for a lot of parents to get accurate information about racism, white supremacy, to pass along to their offspring, our offspring. I know my parents, they didn't have a lot of great info to share with me about workplace racism. But man, that can be huge just because it prevents confusion and exactly anxiety that Ross is mentioning. A lot of that can be minimized when you get a more accurate understanding of exactly why you're having this problem. And then this is specifically what you can try to do to get the situation resolved, to neutralize it as best you can without making new problems. So outstanding. If we have other parents, if you either have children, I guess if they're already at the work point, they're already out in the workforce doing their thing, that would be grand. If you were able to talk with them and kind of give them some tips, what to look for, what to say, what not to say, what to do, what not to do. We have other parents who've shared that with their offspring. That would be grand to hear from. Certainly, if you have your own workplace racism situation, problem or suggestions, that is appreciated as well. Other folks, if we have commentary, feel free. Seems folks are spectating still Thursday evening. I don't know if they're watching, listening while they're doing other things or whatever the case may be. But I do find it a little suspicious that we could have that many folks that are just listening live and have no commentary on workplace racism. I only repeat what I've observed for a number of years when the conversation gets to, I don't know, Area 8. A lot more excited commentary than with workplace racism, although the two subjects do intersect at times. But yeah, I think this is every bit as important, maybe not as exciting, but every bit as important. And I think particularly when folks are bumping into issues on the job and having difficulties that impact, you know, our coins, paycheck, that sort of thing, we recognize and acknowledge the importance, something we should definitely be talking about. Dr. Welsing would want us talking about, for sure, being honest. Give folks a few seconds. And I guess if we have folks, if you have concerns, making sure you're anonymous, people don't pick up your voice, you can drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we can read your situation on the air if you have commentary you'd like to share in that manner. Also wanted to make sure that I asked if we had folks who have figured out, I think I'd asked last week, in terms of the point where you know I should maybe be thinking about investigating switching plantations. I've said consistently, just it being acts of racism, that in and of itself, I don't think that's grounds for I'm going to leave because they're racist. Probably going to find lots of racists, regardless of which particular job you have, where you are, what. It's not the racism per se. I think what I've said is consistently looking at why did you take the job? How long did you anticipate being in this job? Is this a job that you can be at, would like to be at, where you can make the amount of money or what have you that you wanted to, or get the experience that you wanted to get at this job? What are all of the variables that you had in mind in terms of taking this job? How long you anticipated yourself being here? What did you want to get from this experience? At what point should it be, okay, this is no longer the setting for me? Maybe it was, or I accomplished all the things that I wanted to get out of this setting. I should be looking for something new. What are some of the things you should be looking for? What are some of the signs that it might be time to update that resume and be shoving off to other pastures? Folks have thought on that, because I do think that's something that's important from a counter-racist perspective. I've said that I think a lot of times Black people, because of the system, some of the things that we've been talking about, them not giving Black people jobs, even not giving Black people temporary jobs, making it difficult for Black people to get and sustain employment. I think sometimes we can find ourselves in job situations that maybe we only anticipated being there for 6 months, a year, 2 years, a year or two, and then 5 years has passed and we're still there. And it's not a job that we wanted to be at for 5 years. It's not even a job that we enjoy. That sort of thing I think happens to a lot of Black people, where we just get stuck and time ends up just rolling. And you know, like I said, it's been 5 years before we even recognize it. Do folks have thoughts on that? While we're seeing if other folks have situations about their job specifically that, you know, we can address.
Can I be heard? Mm-hmm. Again, I'm sorry. Okay. My way of doing things is ultimately, regardless of what job I have, I always stay abreast of what the market is doing as far as employment, just seeing what's out there. I might even send a few test resumes out too. I do that quite regularly, and it's something that I've just gotten used to, just to be as knowledgeable as possible, so that if something does happen and I have to leave very quickly, or they fire me or whatever, thankfully I've only been fired like once, and that was a long, long time ago, but I've been laid off quite a bit. So that's something that I think is important for anyone, regardless of what the field is, to just kind of be abreast of what your field is doing, what the job market looks like in your field, and if there are any other viable options as far as companies. You know, you might even want to do periodic research on different companies and see what their work environment is. You can check reviews, like where the employees, that some sites have reviews where employees or former employees will review the company and let you know, give ideas as to what it was like working there, what type of environment. They might even give personal anecdotes so you can kind of get a feel for what the company's about. As far as when you're on the job, knowing when it is time to move on to something else, I would say, if you have a consistent situation where you are receiving negative focus from an immediate supervisor or multiple supervisors, and it's become a situation where you're constantly having to defend yourself or even protect your job by having to defend yourself because they're trying to get rid of you, then to me, that's a sign. If you're in a company where you might have people that are working together collectively, for some reason, they might not like you, so they're talking about you behind your back, or they might go out to lunch and, you know, have their little meetings where they're, you know, diabolically planning to either do something, set you up or something like that, and you don't have a successful means of mitigating those circumstances, that's something else. Also, if you're in a situation where the company just doesn't have means of resolution, you might have a company where, like you played earlier, Gus, when the show opened, the NPR clip, where these companies are making active moves to work against you to keep themselves legally out of a situation where they will lose. And they might make it quite evident in how they're handling a situation or situations that you brought up. And if you see that that's the case and there's no actual legal recourse within the company structure, within the company manual where they give you all the different rules of how the company works, what the different means are of resolving any potential issues or adjudicating something that takes place, then a company like that, you might not want to work in the first place. But if you're not sure when you first start and you find that out later, then that might be a sign that you need to look for something, because they're basically telling you this is a company that where any sort of criminality could take place, and we're going to protect ourselves. So even though we say there's an open door policy, and a lot of places will say that open door policy, come on in if there's a problem. And as soon as you go on in with your problem, you are under the radar to be taken care of because you came forward and you were the one who, as they would say, rocked the proverbial boat, whereas everyone else is going along with whatever's going on, whether it's racism, criminality, and racism is criminality, or sexual harassment or anything else. So I think those are different signs that you might want to move on to something else. Like Gus said, you don't want to necessarily, and I think that, honestly, Gus, what you were saying, where you might go into a job and you might only plan to be there for a short period of time, but you end up leaving for a long time. Sometimes that is because you kind of get comfortable with the environment in regards to, okay, I understand how these races work. And even though I didn't plan to be here long, I at least know how these races work. So I know how to kind of navigate this system a little better than having to start over. Other times it could be just the fact that you get comfortable with just having a job. You might be in a situation where unemployment runs out, so you have to take that job because there's no more unemployment checks coming in. So you say, okay, this job might not be paying what I want, whatever the case may be. So I'm just going to take this because this is the only job I can get. And then over time, you just kind of get comfortable in that position. So if that is a situation where you are forced to take a position that you don't necessarily want, have a plan for yourself that you're going to continue to try and mitigate looking for what you want, regardless of what happens at this position that you were forced to take. And even if you set reminders for yourself, like they have little calendars in your phone where you can set a reminder and remind yourself maybe once a month, hey, you know, don't get used to this. We need to start, you know, continue looking for what we're looking for. That's something you can try as well. So there's many mitigating circumstances that can facilitate someone staying somewhere too long, but not necessarily switching companies in a timely manner, per se. But I just thought I would contribute that. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
Right on. I definitely, that comfort point, I definitely think that that is the case for a lot of Black people that have been terrorized. Like talked about, they can make it really difficult for you to get employment. That for a lot of us is just, you know, hey, I am making some income. I do have employment. I don't, you know, want to go through that whole process of having to get interviewed again, fighting and scrapping to get an interview and seeing if I can get rehired. And that might mean starting over from a probationary perspective. Racists can make that whole process ugly enough that you just say, hey, I'm just going to stay here. I didn't intend on being here for 5-10 years, but I just don't feel like going through that whole process of, you know, filling out the applications and all of that. I would be mindful of that and resistant to it, because a lot of times we could get an upgrade. We could get ourselves in a better situation. Not that you know, I totally don't have to deal with racism at all on the job anymore, but a better plantation, if you will. Even being self-employed or working for yourself, a lot of times there are better options for us where we could be in a better situation, even a less stressed situation. Even if we, you know, don't get a financial upgrade, at least be in a situation that's not quite as toxic, where we're not quite as disgusted every day coming to the job. Because I think that can just happen to a lot of Black people all over the world. We just get stuck in situations at a job that we absolutely hate and end up stuck there for 5-10 years. Gang, other folks have comments. Folks are done with all of their spectating. The number again, 641-715-3640, and the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you have commentary. Another tidbit I would add to the list in terms of if you're on a job, and maybe this is a place that I don't want to be like long term, like something over 2 years or over a year or what have you. This is, you know, just going to be a temporary thing. If you're on a job and you don't have sick days, you don't have time for like loss in a family, you know, if a grandparent or someone should pass and you don't get time to attend their funeral and what have you, in my view, that is not long term employment. In my opinion, I think if you're someplace and you don't have sick days, like, oh man, do you think you're going to be able to stay on that job 5-10 years? Even if you know, have extraordinary health, do you think over a 5-year period that there's not going to be a point ever where you might, you know, need 3-4 days off because of illness? That should be something. And there's no chance like for this to change. Like you can stay at the company for a year, two, three years and just never. That's just not a job. They just don't offer time for bereavement, sick leave. I've talked to a lot of Cal's listeners who have jobs all over, and people consistently running into that problem where they have a loss in the family. Someone passes and no, I'm so sorry. It'll be the same type of line. Oh, I'm so sorry that, you know, you had a loss in your family, and we grieve with you. Know, we're a family here. We grieve with you and we're so sorry for your loss. But yeah, we don't have bereavement time. So, or it's real limited. Like, I see. So your grandparent passed away in Georgia and you live in Texas. Well, our bereavement policy is 1 day. So better get there and back in a day. If you don't think it's going to take, or if you think it's going to take more than a day, then you know you won't be employed here after your 1 day. Sorry for your loss. That sort of thing seems to be real common with a lot of Black people having that sort of employment type policy. In my view, that's definitely a big one. You can put on the list for this should be temporary. Like this should be, I should be looking for a job that at least I can put myself in a better position to take care of my health and not be sitting thinking like, oh man, I feel terrible today, but I don't have sick days to take off. Look to get yourself in a better predicament. That's not the sort of job that you want to be staying in long term. You want to try and do everything you can to change that situation. Other folks who dialed in, if we had other folks who had commentary, what we've been discussing thus far, if you had your own situation, other folks that wanted to chime in.
Hey, Gus, what you just said was really important, too, and it made me think about something else. And that is sometimes they'll limit who is considered family members for you to bereave. So in other words, they'll say, we only will give you bereavement if it's a parent or a grandparent or a sibling. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes they'll just say parents and siblings only. So you might have a grandparent that passes away. They say, well, they don't fall under the purview of, you know, our policy. So no, you can't go to your grandmother's funeral, but you can't go if your mom or dad dies or one of your siblings die. So that's something else to look at too, because they do play those kind of semantical games where, you know, well, for this family member, it's okay. But for this family member, you got to come to the job. And a lot of times, just suffering through the grief of loss and having to come to work can drive your health into a tailspin. So that is very, very important. I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
Absolutely. I've talked to Cal's listeners. That exact thing happened. They had a loss in the family and they were young, you know, everything is relative about them. The younger person, weren't sick, didn't have any ailments or anything, but they had a loss in the family and it did impact their health, where they did get sick right shortly after the funeral. And they don't have bereavement time and then you don't have sick days. So it's funeral. And then I got sick and now I have the added stress of, oh man, do I take off? I don't have days to take off. Oh my gosh. Am I going to get it? Stress upon stress upon stress. And that's something a lot of times that'll be, either they'll tell you when you first take the job or when you get your policy and procedure when you start the job. That's something you should highlight, read very carefully. Whatever the policy is around leave, sick days, bereavement, paid time off, all of that. And any questions, get that cleared up in advance, because you certainly are not going to be thinking clearly at your best, hopefully not. But if you do have someone pass in the family, you need time to take off and what have you, that's probably not going to be the time that you want to be, oh man, I'm totally ignorant. I have never cracked my policy and procedure. What is our policy on bereavement? Do I have that? That's probably not the time that you want to be looking at that for the first time. Other folks, we haven't heard from our caller in Florida. Did you have a commentary you wanted to share?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Yes, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. There were a few incidents I wanted to share. There was an email that went out earlier this week. There was like a judge that was very angry and very upset because the female that I was speaking about who was terminated, he's been very upset that the functionality of the paperwork process and hasn't been efficient ever since she was fired. So it's been, I guess, reported that he, not only sent an email, but he came downstairs and the same white man that fired the black female, he looked right through him, like what they call sized him up and just said, forcefully and simply just rejected him. Like, you know, I don't even want to talk to you. Like, who is over you? And this is the person that supposedly fired the black female. So he told the same person, I don't even want to waste my time talking to you. Like, I want to go to whoever's next. And, you know, this person was, the judge was upset about the paperwork not being filed correctly. So he was saying, I don't know what's going on down here. You don't want to blame everything on, you know, he used the girl's name, but these problems are still happening. So like, why did you fire her? So, you know, very authoritative, presence and, you know, knowing he has power, showing his dominance even over other white people. And a lot of the, older ones, they retired from last year. So it's like, and I've seen, cause like I talk to the judges all the time and I see other white people, I would use the term fold, get really nervous And, you know, I just felt comfortable, you know, and it was kind of, in a way, comical. But, you know, the white supremacy that plays out. And, you know, this guy was just simply talking about a signature, like, hey, you know, he pulled this guy out of a meeting. And this is the guy that shows his white power over the officers. You know, I showed him to where this guy was. So he said, is this your signature? He was like, yeah. He was like, oh, you know, I was just checking. He walked all the way down. We came all the way down four floors just to check his signature to see if he was checking the authenticity of it. And he was like, yeah, I don't know who you are. So, you know, he said, you know, not personal, you know, very business-like. Hey, I just wanted to see if this is your signature. And he says, well, okay, you know. And this guy, he was like talking like his feelings were hurt. He said, well, he didn't even know who I was, you know. I was just, you know, just listening to this stuff because I interact with different people throughout the building. So, yeah, it was a little bit of controversy with that. So I don't know if he planned to sit down with the main head clerk, white man. So it should be an update on that soon to come. But there was another incident where, like, I'm supposed to be getting a new desk in the research area. And this white man, he was making a lot of sexually suggestive comments to this white woman. And I don't know if she seemed to be enjoying it or what, or she was uncomfortable by it. But like my computer and stuff was being moved to another table. And it was a point where he asked me a question, and then he said, are you feeling picked on or whatever? And then I said, wait, do you mean mistreated? And then he said, well, yeah. I said, all the time. You know, and, you know, like, he asked another question. No, it was a statement. He said, well, you know, I'm not picking on you or nothing like that. I said, but that ain't what you asked me. He said, he's like, yeah, but, you know, I asked you, are you feeling picked on? And he said, you said, what do you mean by mistreating? I said, yeah. And then he said, yeah, but you also said that all the time. I said, of course. Then, you know, he kind of like, you know, got quiet. He didn't really say nothing. You know, a lot of the joking kind of stopped. It was a few people around when I said it. I just felt like that was the response that I gave for that one. And, there was another thing that I noticed about. It's funny that you mentioned the sick time. Like, apparently they're working on some kind of new policy where they are going to, fuse together the vacation and the sick time, I guess, starting sometime next year. So I don't really know how that's going to turn out, but it should be really interesting. And also, I was speaking to a non-white female. She speaks Spanish, but she was saying that because she was friends with this the female who got fired, and she told me that the warden, the term I use, the white woman that's the warden, she called her up, like, and she works upstairs now, and she was just, you know, asking up random questions about, you know, well, how's everything going up there? And, you know, how's your children and stuff? And she used the term, she thought it was very suspicious. That's the term she used. Because I guess they might know that they are some kind of associate. So, you know, she said it felt like she was studying me. So I said, that's interesting. And I said, to be expected. So, you know, I just, I left the Negova to the next area. So it seemed like, you know, it's non-white people on a job that's noticing the things that white people are doing. It's a lot of racism being practiced. And that's all I have for now. And thanks for allowing me to share.
Appreciate that. Did I hear that correctly, that got called out in the work setting, that the black female, you've been talking about this before, the black female who was fired, and now it seems that there are some clerical issues about maybe the paperwork hasn't been filed or signed, some sort of clerical errors, that it seemed like they were trying to blame this on the black female that got fired. Now she's gone, but they're still having the same clerical problems. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, sir. It seemed like, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
It seemed like that's what I've been told that he was getting at in the email. Like, I guess it had missed its due date, I guess, because the day is the day where they're supposed to do the injunctions for domestic violence. So she would stay in, like, later after work, I guess, you know, after I get off, because I guess she came in later and she would stay later to process the injunction paperwork. So apparently they hadn't trained another person a couple months ago, but apparently it hadn't been efficient training to do her job whenever she's, you know, whether it be absent or not there or whatever. And they missed four injunction paperwork that was supposed to be due at a certain time in a week. So he became very upset. And I think he was already, like, really, you know, I guess angry about her being fired. So he used his white power to pretty much somewhat intimidate the white people down in our area. I mean, because I've seen that, you know, they can get really really scared when they get approached by these judges, just what I've seen. So I don't know if they necessarily saw that coming, but yeah, he was saying that, you know, these issues are still happening after she was fired. So why you're trying to blame it on her, like, why did she get fired? So it seemed like that's what his tone was, but I didn't get to read the email or see what he said, like, word for word though. So, yeah, that's where it seemed like he was coming from, that kind of perspective.
That sort of thing is very, very common in terms of black people on the job. Something is not being done correctly. Somehow, some way, the black person ends up being blamed, whether they did it or not. And we've had a number of black people, they've just concluded that seems to be one of the standard racist codes for on the job. Something goes wrong, find nearest Negro to blame, regardless if they're not in the department or what have you. We'll just find somebody. Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was Timmy. It was his fault. We'll just need to fire him and get him out of there. And whew, right on. All right. And then we just keep going about our business. So I say you have to be really alert on these jobs, paying attention. Failure to train. We've talked about that for years. That's in Mr. Edward Williams' book as well, about not training black people correctly. And then after they don't train you correctly, that'll come back and be grounds for firing you because they didn't train you correctly in the first place. We've talked about that for years. I also thought that segment where the warden, I think you said the nickname, where he comes in, after he's making his foul, filthy, trashy comments in the workplace. Oh, are you feeling mistreated? That's exactly what I was saying earlier about they use the type of language to make it seem like you're a child. Like this is just, you're just a little immature, little first grader or something, and you're just feeling picked on at the playground because I said something and it hurts your little feelings, or you've got a little grievance or a complaint. Oh, am I being mistreated? Do I feel I'm being mistreated? Oh, all the time. Just changing, slight change in language. Not picked on, mistreated. And, oh, yeah, I feel mistreated all that. Just telling the truth. Absolutely. And from there, somehow it's, well, wait a minute. Mistreated has a different sound to it than picked on. Am I mistreating? Like, whoa, 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 whoa. Now it's not fun anymore. Now it's not joking around. In fact, I might not even want to talk to you anymore. That's the sort of thing that you want to to happen in the world, at least for me, when you can, it's not fun. Anytime you can stop racist man and racist woman from having fun at your expense while they're mistreating you, great job with counter-racism, in my opinion. Grand, grand, grand. Other folks who dialed in, our other caller in Florida, if you had commentary you wanted to share, line should be open. Firefighter specifically, did you have commentary?
Greetings. I kind of like just chimed in. I would just say that I had what I would think a constructive meeting with two other non-white black males who are firefighters, and they were motivated to call me because of the workplace racism program that comes on Thursday. So, you know, this effort of talking about workplace racism is important and is being affected. Just wanted to include that into the program.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that, retired firefighter. Right on. Said very important. I've been saying that, you know, shouldn't have spectators with all the things that are happening. The situation that happened with the fire department down in Miami last week, with all the attention there, I think we should all be focused on, serious about the labor aspect of racism, white supremacy, and picking out strategies specifically to help us minimize some of these problems. Thomas in New York, did you have commentary as well, sir? Line should be open.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers.
Greetings.
Yeah, I wanted to give a follow-up on a few months ago, well, almost a year ago, I reported about a black man who was the police, his car crashed. They were chasing someone, and this black man that they were chasing crashed into an innocent black man. And he caught on fire. And when he got out the car, the police thought that the person that was on fire was the guy they were chasing. So while he's standing there being burned, he's burning, you know, walking flame of fire. They just decided to tackle him and start stomping him out. And said that they were trying to put the fire out, even though they were brutally stomping this man out. So those cops were reprimanded. In charge with attempted murder. So I doubt they're going to get convicted, but I just thought that that was a good follow-up. And it leads me into the next story. I was at the hospital, and I've been so lucky not to be put in the ER ever since the incident came up with my vacation, and I was able to go in there and voice some of the things I've seen. But either way, we were shorthanded, so I got put in the ER. And it just so happened on a night where there were four shootings. One black male came in. He was shot in the face. The bullet went through one side of his cheek and came out the other side. He was also shot in the abdomen. However, as soon as they rushed him in to the hospital, they called for a massive transfusion and rushed him to the operating room. So I wasn't able to see what happened. However, I'm in the emergency room, and the cops are there, and they were, and this is just to show you that they're not ignorant. The cop said, oh, well, I guess you could drop an album now, you know, because he got shot in the face. The other cop started laughing, said, oh, he's 56. So these are all white cops. The third white cop said, yeah, well, he did, got to get shot 8 more times in order to drop an album. And they just start having this huge laugh about it. And I just thought it was so tacky. So that was my workplace racism, and I'll mute my line because my train's about to take off.
Appreciate that, Thomas in New York. The tackiness, I mean, and in that environment, I mean, again, we're not in a brothel or something where you could just be lewd and be making your little gross comments about whatever. But I mean, we're in a medical setting. Wow. Total disregard for black life. And again, you can't, in my view, you can't be ignorant about racism, white supremacy, and make a comment like that. I just don't think that, you know, a white person would sit around, or white people, since it was multiple, I just don't think that they would sit around and make comments like that about a white person. You know, even if he looked exactly like Eminem, I just don't think that that would be the case. The total disregard, even under those circumstances where you've had this gruesome attack and still just thinking of my next racist joke, a la Louis C.K. Other folks who wanted to dial, I am glad. I do remember the update on the first report, though, the black male that caught on fire and it was the wrong person and they were kicking him and stomping him and all that. I do remember that case from before, and we'll be interested to see how that, that case evolves over the next months, years, probably going to 2018. Other folks that dialed in, if you had commentary that you wanted to share, if you had a hand up, line should be open. We miss anybody? Caller at 8704-8704. Did you have commentary?
Hello. May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I called in a few weeks ago, so this would be like my second time calling. And mostly just commentary and maybe a little tip. This is the one, the guy who called, my girlfriend works at a barista. And the tip would be, I guess for me, well, the example, for me, it helped me. I just took time off from work. I couldn't afford it. I didn't have no paid sick time. They wouldn't even give me no vacation time. But for me, I just felt like I needed to take a trip. I went to the Redwoods, seen it. It felt real good. Leading into my next point, when I got back, I felt real good inside. So, and just listening to the cows, just starting to try to get more on code. When I got back to work, I was just more calm, keeping to myself, not answering people's questions. And the situation was at break time. I'm sitting there minding my business. Everybody's talking. And a white female steps up to me and she's like, James, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, why? And she's like, well, you've been quiet since you've been back. You've been kind of keeping to yourself. Is everything okay with you? And I'm like, yeah, I'm actually doing great. I feel actually better than I have. Is there a problem with the way I'm keeping to myself? She's like, no, I was just worried and just checking up on you. And I guess inside I just kind of got offended on that just because I feel great and I'm minding my business. And I guess it's seen as, I don't know, however she's seen it, I just didn't like the way she asked me. And I just asked her, I said, what's the problem about me minding my business? Is there a reason why somebody can be quiet and calm and not feel great? And she didn't really have an answer for that. She kind of just said, no, there's nothing wrong with that. And kind of, I guess, seen her way out and kind of started walking away, which I thought that was weird itself. But which would lead me into my tip and just listening to the stupid talk, crazy talk, and you, Gus, always saying stay in the question lane. It just remembered a while back, a long time ago, I also read another book called Freedom is More Than a Seven-Letter Word. And just speaking on questions, one of the chapters, the chapter is called Hive Mind. And one of the things in there said that once you answer somebody's question, you have entered their brainwash. And once I read that, it just kind of hit me kind of hard, and I read it a long time ago, and that's one of the things I revert to when people start asking me questions, and I may not even know how to answer them or answer them in a defensive kind of way, so I just don't answer them, or I ask a question right back, or I ask questions to get them to explain their questions, but when I don't have the right answer or just don't want to answer at all, I try not to. And just going back to the book I read, it just seems like the moment you answer somebody's question, you kind of set yourself up for failure. So like you said, Gus, just stay in the question line. And that's where I end.
Appreciate that, sir. Great suggestions. And with that, if they're asking you questions, particularly in a workplace setting, a white person is asking you questions and you don't feel comfortable, you don't understand why they're asking you these questions, or you have any level of suspicion at all, I don't know should be an acceptable answer to, because I think something that's in Crazy Talk, Stupid Talk too. Last week we covered that, where he says sometimes people, for whatever reason, just, you know, feel like they can't just say, I don't know. They, you know, feel like they, that's not acceptable, what have you. I think that's great. And in that situation, the immediate, when they ask the question and you're uncertain about how you want to respond, I don't know. What do you think? So then you can immediately switch it and get them to talk. And I think a number of our listeners have used that redirect question to get it off them completely. And I did want to add also what you were saying about you felt offended, I think was the word you used, when your white coworker, when she came to, I guess, ask you how you were doing, you know, you seemed like you were keeping to yourself or whatever she said, and you said you felt offended. In my view, I think it's just understanding that is one of the ways that white people practice racism. That's one of their obligations. That's one of the duties of being a member of the white race. You keep tabs on niggers. Specifically, you keep tabs on the ones that you're directly around. If we're talking a workplace situation, that is one of the duties of white folks. They're going to be keeping an eye on you in a variety of ways, electronic surveillance and monitoring your social media and everything else, and just casually watching. Oh, he just took this vacation. I wonder where he was going. Let's look at his social media, see if he's posted anything. Now he's back. Let's observe. Let's see. Did you bring any souvenirs? Any new pictures on his desk? Oh, he's not talking at all. James, what's the problem? She'll go and ask questions. She leaves. She's probably going back to report to the other white people on the job. Anybody, if you're a new listener, or even if you're an older listener, and that's just not your conclusion, that's what I've seen over years. I've experienced that directly. We've had a lot of black people come on this program from all over the world, and that's what they've testified to. That's the way that I see racism, white supremacy. That is a white person being on their job. That's what they're supposed to do. Come ask this nigger questions. What are you doing? Why aren't you talking to us? Who have you been hanging out with? Why are you staying by yourself? Questions, questions, questions. Keeping informed about our niggers so we can better control them. And I think just having that understanding on the job, I think that can be very helpful. And then exactly what you said, you ask questions. You're very strategic about how you go about answering those questions. And I also think it's not always applicable, but what Roz said about just being clear from the beginning. And sometimes you can even remind folks and just say, hey, I'm a quiet person. I just don't do a whole lot of talking and fraternizing. I just try to be serious and focused on my task. Just took some time off. So, hey, I'm just trying to get on the job. I don't even have time to be frivolous and just chit-chatting. What can be said about that? This is someone who's trying to work. Sounds like this is someone that we might even want to promote. We need more people like that with that sort of can-do attitude. I'll stop there.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I just wanted to add, and another reason why I would suspect she did ask me that is because I've been there 2 years now, and I would have to admit when the first maybe year and a half, because I've been listening to the cows maybe a month and a little bit, and been listening to a few other lectures like Claude Anderson and whatnot. But yeah, I have to admit that I have been kind of just being on code a little more, and I realized thinking on when I first started the job, I was always answering these questions, and people always want to know what I'm doing and where I live and who I live with. And because I've been there 2 years now, and I moved a couple times, and just this most recent move, I haven't really told anybody where it's at or what it looks like or nothing. And they just seem so intrigued, and I'm just like, why are you asking me all these questions? So, but the most, since I took the trip, and it just helped me get away from all that, and just, oh, just me and my girlfriend, and it felt good just not being around nothing. So when I got back, it helped me, like, actually stay on code, because sometimes when I try to be on code, I slip up, and that's why I was offended when she asked me that, because I find out, like, a lot of times when I slip on code, it's because they come up to you trying to be all nice, like, trying to be your friend, and sometimes you fall into it. You're like, oh, okay, let me tell you my day or something, and then come to find out it's you giving up all your info and ain't told you nothing about them. Like some new dude, he asked me if I live in a house or apartment, and I thought that was kind of normal, so I said, oh, I live in a house. And then he's like, who you live with? And I was like, why? And then it's just from there he just kind of got quiet. I just realized once you start asking these folks why, they they kind of stop asking you questions. And that's where I am. But one last thing. Like I said, the main reason I think she might have came up to me and asked me those questions is because the more on code I get, the kind of like less questions I answer. And I only like to answer questions that have to do with work. So when it's personal, I don't answer it or ask another question. And lately I've just been all about work and not laughing and joking and stuff. And I think that was maybe one of the reasons why she came up to me. And that's where I am.
I think we've said it for years. I've said it for years. That really sticks out. And that's, for me, just further evidence that white people are not ignorant about white supremacy. But it really sticks out. A black person that's not trying to giggle and be on the entertainment committee and laughing it up, joke, 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 all of that, being serious, going about their business in a codified manner, that really sticks out. White people have invested a lot of time and energy to make sure that black people are not functioning in that way. So when you do it, it's like, wow, this is going against all of our hard work. What is going on here? Questions, questions. Something went awry in our system. We got to see if we can, you know, get this back together. And we got to be more careful about how we deal with this one. That's pretty much what they see. And I also wanted to make sure I got in that I do think it's an important act of black self-respect and black mental health when you take time from the job. You talked about going to the Redwoods and you and your girlfriend and just getting some time away. That is hugely important. Regularly, we just on the job and just won't take the time off. And, you know, I need the money. I can't afford to take the time off. And sometimes, hey, not doing it has a huge and detrimental impact to our mental health. Huge. Taking that time off is hugely important, particularly for black people. So many of us are under stress and the toxicity on so many levels of white supremacy. That time to just rejuvenate, to think, to even just think, you know, how am I feeling about things, to just reflect on where you are at that point is hugely important. Act of self-respect, something that we need to do, just taking our time and energy to invest in ourselves. Other folks that we have not heard from at all, Emmy should be with us as well. If you had commentary, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, everyone. There's just a couple of things that I wanted to share. I'll answer, I think you asked, I know you posed a question to children, or to parents who have children. I'm not a parent. I don't have children, but I definitely remember my childhood very well. And I worked a lot, or I started working early. And so if and when I have children, I would want my children to work too. And the reason that I would want them to work is that I think introduction to that environment earlier on, when there's not a lot at stake, you know, it's like a just not important job, like a fast food restaurant or some type of store, would give us, I think, a great, you know, stomping ground or something like that, like a practical where, you know, we can begin to apply certain things. In addition, I think it teaches a lot of invaluable life skills that I definitely notice there's a difference between younger people who do work and younger people who don't. But when to know, is it time to leave? I think one thing that I think is really important that we get to do that the system of white supremacy prevents us from doing is really getting to know ourselves, like getting to know who you are and be able to tell what's good for you, what feels right for you, trust how you feel and trust your instincts and your thoughts and all of that without necessarily needing any validation whatsoever. So it could be, you know, from things like whether a relationship is healthy or toxic to whether an environment is healthy or toxic, or sometimes something as simple as don't go there today. That I think comes with the silence that I think is kept from us and that is really important. So when is it time to leave? It's easier to know that when you know yourself, because you know what your goal is, you know, what your end goal is, you know, what you can take, you know, what you can't take, you know, what are your possibilities should you leave, what are your opportunities, what you could sacrifice in terms of maybe luxuries or comforts. So maybe you could take a less stressful job that maybe paid less money. I mean, all of these things are things that you yourself would know about you. So what choices you choose to make really depend on how in tune you are with yourself. That might be redundant, but it wasn't always the case for me. So I used to always like need to like some kind of outside something in some shape or form. It didn't always have to be like a person, but some kind of like omen or whatever that I was, it was, you know, something was right or something wasn't not right. But I don't need it now. It just is what it is. That's how I feel. That's what I think. That's what I know. That is my conclusion. It's not for discussion. I'm leaving. I'm staying. I'm going. I'm, you know, whatever it is. So I think that's helpful. I was on my way to TA Wednesday morning. And I'm always on the verge of being late and not, you know, terribly late, but literally by like a minute or two. So I'm supposed to be there at 9 and I'd be like potentially walking in at 9:02. So, you know, it's been raining over here on the East Coast where I'm at. And so I'm like, there's a hill from where I park my car to where I got to go. I come out of the parking deck and I've been watching this and I didn't realize what I was watching, but Black people, when we get out the car, when we get out the car and, you know, cause imagine I'm telling y'all that I'm always about to be late. So in college, all classes start at the same time. If classes start at 9, they start at 9 for everybody. White people don't get like a 9:15 class and Black people get a 9 o'clock class. They start at 9 for everybody. So the Black people, you always see Black people running, always, like running, like skipping over puddles, running in the street. Like Black people are hustling up this hill. And I noticed that I don't see any white people having anything going on. Doesn't matter if they're older, younger, briefcase, like one would argue maybe they're a professor, nothing. Does not matter. Even the Black people with briefcases. Now, I guess it didn't stick out to me until maybe Wednesday because I thought, it was like, wait a minute. If we're all here, what, only the Black people have class at 9 and all the white people just have like a 10 o'clock class and they just happen to be an hour early? No, that's not what's happening. What's happening is Black people are feeling that pressure of like CP time and being late and all that stuff. And every time you walk in and the professor looks at you and judges you, then you feel bad. And now you don't want to ask questions because now you're going to look stupid and all this stuff. Like it all plays. And I was thinking all for like a minute or two, you always see Black people running. And them white people will actually stop and talk to each other, stop to sip their coffee. Because, you know, if you walk and sip your coffee, you might spill it. Like they just be chilling. That's just what it is. And I just thought it was fascinating. I just want to say like something that I've used to talk about a lot, but I think it's very important. I guess a suggestion that I would make, something that I've learned and that I would share is that, you know, sometimes we talk about, you know, people not recognizing whatever it is special about us, our intelligence, our work ethic, whatever. And that's fine and dandy. But the more I think about it, the more I think it's just better that they don't. I mean, the way that I feel, my code is, I don't want you to remember me. I don't want you thinking about me. I want you to forget my name. Like, I don't even want us to have an experience where you remember me. Now, I know that seems strange, like in a work environment when you work with people, but I wanted to be like, if I left, you don't ever think about me ever again. It was just like, oh, yeah, I think she might have worked here at some time or something like that. And I thought about it because today I was running late. And, but I actually ended up being kind of cute. So when I walked in, and I'm not saying that no type of way, but I walked into class, I was literally like, boom, right on time. It was like 9 o'clock, but I'm huffing and puffing and all that stuff. And I walked through the door and immediately the professor, the look she shot me, it was so interesting. And I'd be looking around like, I wonder, do any of these students see this? Like, you know, and like the whole, you know, from top to bottom, everything. I was like, all right, well, look, whatever. So then I went to leave and, oh, okay, here's another thing. I was listening to Dr. Welsing, and she said Black people need to admit that they're afraid of white people. And if I will say it for myself, yes, I'm not, I could sit here and say, like, I'm not in the mood for it, I ain't got the time for it, but
with that, the access that that white woman has that I TA for, I'm afraid of what she could do with it. She could potentially mess up so much that I'm trying to do and so much that I've tried to work hard like towards. Because she is in the math department. I'm in the math department. So all it takes is for her to take my name and all of that. And it won't matter that I'm a straight A student. It won't matter that I can teach this math in ways that makes it applicable and understandable. It won't matter, you know, and that could go far, especially if I end up reaching the goals that I'm trying to. So I am afraid of the power that this white woman holds. So with that being said, and I can feel her aggression and her violence. She keeps it together, of course, because this is the dance, but it's there. And I feel it. So I am getting ready to leave. And, oh, so with that being said, I'm sorry. She made a mistake. I don't correct her mistakes. I don't correct her mistakes because the minute I do that, now I have to deal with her passive aggressive attacks. And I'm just trying to make it through the end of the semester. And she can just chalk it up and say, oh, Emmy was always late, but whatever. You know, I don't want it to become some kind of thing where she looks me up in the system and she's tracking me and seeing what I'm doing and all of that, because it can't, she has access to all of that. So, she must, and I had told the students that I was working with that their answer was correct. She had just made a mistake, but ignore it. It's not a big deal. Well, one of them must have brought it up. And so she just kept like staring at me, and it was like, she couldn't even control her face anymore. And I just was like, yeah, what my conclusions are my conclusions. I'm trying to get in and get out because she, there's more there than just some type of, you know, insecurity or whatever. So, another situation with a white woman. So I have a project to, okay, so I have bio and I have two racist white lab partners. And for the last dissection that we did, I was taking pictures primarily because I thought it was cool what I was doing. And, but I also wanted to reference them and whatnot. So the white female, she's like, well, the pictures I took didn't come out right. Can you send them to me? Or, and I was like, well, the ones I took didn't come out right. Because no, I'm not sending you shit. You know what I'm saying? So then now it's here we go with the passive aggressive. So then I took another picture and she was like, well, can you send me that one? So I lied. Here's the next tip I'm going to give y'all that works for me. I lie. I used to be a terrible liar, but I lied. So I was like, sure. That lab ended and I was out that door so fast. Forgot, like, I don't know her name. She don't know mine. I can't email her anything. So we come to the next lab. I don't care. I already knew what I was doing. Like, yep, let's keep it moving. So the next one, she tries to do a similar situation. So now I'm just sitting here. I'm tired. I'm exhausted, y'all. So the professor now, white female, she notices and she's like, are you okay? And I was like, here she go with the fake caring or whatever. I was like, yeah, I'm just tired. I got this project coming up and I had to go find these particular types of plants. And she was like, well, if you need any help, just, you know, identifying them, let me know. So here's why, like the previous male caller said, sometimes they get you with the niceness. They do. They really do. So I was out there in the rain taking pictures, grabbing up all these specimens for these plants, ran back to the lab, and I took great photos. So she was like, yeah, send them to me, and I'll help you, you know, send me the pictures, and I'll try to help you identify it. Sent her the pictures. Now she wanted to take my pictures and put them on her Instagram account. She's like, well, of course I'll give you credit. So what's your Instagram account? I'm not giving her my Instagram account. I'm not giving her nothing. As far as I'm concerned, yeah, whatever she might be, I might let her post the pictures, but there, I don't have an Instagram. That's going to be my response. But I just wanted to share that with y'all. So they do constantly doing exactly what they've always done. Taking, raping, deceiving, and all of that. And the funny part was, like, inside, I felt that was going to happen. But by the time I felt it, it was too late. And this is just a tidbit that I throw. This would be the last thing. Other than, two things, and then I'm done. Silence works for me. Like, maybe I'll reach a point where I'll start asking questions and stuff like that. But I literally just don't say anything. And it's, like, very weird for people, but I just don't. Like, you literally could ask me, and I just look at you. And so now people just think I'm really weird and that I'm really crazy. But that's actually kind of okay with me. You know what I mean? Like, they just dismiss me after a while, think I'm stupid or whatever. And it works for me. I'm able to get a lot done by just not being a part of it at all. But that's different. It might be, you know, definitely specific to my circumstance. you know, being in school or whatever, because it is a little different in the pharmacy. I do talk, but I lie all the time. I completely have a different mask that I wear in that environment, and I'm very clear about that. Like, it comes right off. I come in and get on the call and talk to you all, put it on when I go there, deal with the white people, smile. They have no idea that I would ever think some of the things that I think. So, but here's the last thing I wanted to share, because I think it might be helpful that sometimes maybe might be overlooked, is if you're ever feeling overwhelmed, and this isn't a critique at all, but sometimes there are tools or better ways that we can organize ourselves and our time so that we can maximize our time. Because I think if we get caught up in the work as if the work is the end goal, like going to work and making the money is the end goal, it's easy to get caught up and get stressed out about that. But if there's something a little bit larger, something like a goal that we have, something we're working towards that's completely outside of that, organizing our time to reach that goal, whatever it is, can help to alleviate some of the stress, because work isn't your everything, and other people are not your everything. Like, these relationships are not your everything, but what it is you're trying to do, what it is you're trying to contribute, who you're trying to become, those kinds of things. And sometimes people feel like they can't do it because they don't have enough time. And I totally understand that. But there are ways to be more organized, to get more things done so that you can actually be like happier. So I'll stop there because I feel like I've been talking a lot. But I do thank you all for listening. So have a good night.
Appreciate that. Emmy, context of white supremacy. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. I know certainly we talked about that on the program as well, in terms of employing deception when dealing with whites on the job, with, you know, that way you can avoid some of their questions and just try to minimize revealing any information that you don't want whites that you're working with to know about you. We talked about that on the program. I think Thomas in New York, in fact, has talked about employing that same strategy on the job and just telling white people whatever they want to hear. Like, oh yeah, I grew up, I've been selling cocaine since I was three. Had, you know, five of my childhood friends got killed in the first grade. Oh yeah. Thug life all the way. Had that tattooed when I was 5 years old. You know, just make up whatever you want to tell them. And they, oh really? Wow. Can't believe that. And just whatever you need to say to get through the day. And other folks, I think Mr. Fuller and some of our other guests said, hey, they just go with the strategy that they want. Always go with saying true things. That way they don't have to worry about getting their story confused and that sort of thing. Just figuring out what's going to work best for you and stick with that consistently. I also think knowing, number one, recognizing that is, you know, hostility and violence, even when it comes in the what they call passive aggressive form. I think recognizing that, because a lot of times I think we make mistakes in that regard. And I think that behavior probably is what's motivating the black students to be running and in a hurry. That passive, what they call passive aggressiveness, that white violence and hostility is what's waiting on them in the classroom. You've got some probably white instructor, probably a white female instructor waiting, who does have a lot of power and authority over their academic career and, you know, what grade they're going to get for that class and, you know, what their GPA might look like for the rest of that semester or that year. I mean, that's quite a bit of power and influence for folks who are looking to do big things career wise. And, you know, if they're trying to do grad school or med school or whatever their plans are. So absolutely, that can motivate a lot of anxiety and hurry and white people just not feeling, white students not feeling that same pressure. And I think that happens on the job too. I think we've had black people call in and talk about on the jobs getting fired for being a minute late. Supposed to be here at 9 o'clock. You got here at 9:02. Hey, we got rules, man. You know, got to follow the rules. Can't have you being late every day. And just, that's the world that we live in. So, and that's another, I was playing that clip today where Mr. Fuller was talking about time and factoring that in terms of how far you live from your job. Although white people got that factor too. White people tend to do a very good job of having it so that black people are not able to consistently for long periods of time have a residence and employment that are in close proximity. It seems that whites are very skilled, so that you end up somehow, some way, having a very long commute, and it seems to not really matter where you happen to be geographically. I've heard that from lots and lots of black people, and that takes a huge toll, having that distance and potential anxiety if there's a trap or anything, because I mean, once that distance starts to get further and further, any little thing can throw that schedule off, so that now, instead of me getting there at 8:55, now I get there at 9:02. Did other folks have commentary that they wanted to share? Anybody we missed totally? I think the caller at 2960, did you have commentary? Caller at 2960.
Oh, can I be heard?
Princess, Florida is dominating. Long live the Sunshine State. Yes, ma'am, we can hear you.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call. Glad I was able to call in for workplace racism officially. I did want to give you guys an update on my work situation if I hadn't already discussed it, but basically, we have a new manager since my other manager, the black female, was eventually transferred out, and it's a white male. So luckily, I already know what to expect. Overall, everything has actually been kind of chill with him. I've been dealing with an issue with the assistant store manager, who is East Indian, non-white, non-black male. He's a dark-skinned type Indian guy. And basically, he had this past weekend tried to basically sabotage my work for whatever reason after our district manager came and did a walk through our office, unbeknownst to me. I didn't know he was coming, but you know, everything was in place and ready. So, you know, I had passed our walkthrough and stuff, so everything was okay. But we had a delivery come in, and basically, you know, our goal is to have a turnaround time of making sure that we complete our truck within a 24-hour turnaround time, so that way it doesn't carry it over into the next business day, for the next business week, I mean. So, you know, normally we follow through with doing our other tasks that's on our list, as well as truck, and apparently he basically freaked out as I was getting ready to leave that Sunday because I had opened. And so he got upset because I didn't go literally down the list line by line of the things he wanted me to do. And basically, I didn't work Monday, so that allowed him to have time to speak with the store manager. And although the store manager gave me a good review on my walkthrough and stuff, even though he didn't say anything to me, I could tell that he might have been told something about the truck hadn't been worked on because we were working on the other project that he actually wanted us to work on for whatever reason, and basically tried to throw me up under the bus. And when I came into work, because I'm in the process of moving right now, but when I came into work to kind of get some documents, print out some stuff, personal stuff, I had confronted him real quick and was like, you know, hey, what was that all about? You know, that was kind of, you know, lowballing me. Like, whoa, what are you doing? We're trying to get rid of that type of behavior throughout the store now that the old store manager is gone. So he tried to play it off as if, oh, he didn't know what I was talking about and this, that, and the other. So when I briefly talked to the store manager about, you know, my designated Bay Area in the stockroom, he wasn't there the day before. And so, you know, the assistant store manager basically had lied, saying that he didn't know about the, you know, the stock room and, you know, my Bay Area when it was completed, when we finished truck and stuff, and why it was all a mess. And so, you know, like I said, it's almost like you're constantly trying to put out fires, whether it's at home or at work, you know, wherever you go, it's always like constant chaos, and it's like you can't get a break anywhere. And just dealing with other victims, other Black people, has been really draining, and I'm finding that I have absolutely no sympathy for some of us, and it's unfortunate. But I think that's just the reality that I've come to accept, because just having to, in recent events, having to deal with the shenanigans of some other Black people and how it impacts me on an emotional, physical, and psychological level, it's not good. But so that's just an update of what's been going on. And
wow.
Black brother hell.
Surprised. I'm so stunned to hear your lack of, or difficulty having sympathy with other Black people. That's wow. Number one,
why?
Well, I'll get to that. But first of all, one of the points that I thought was important when you said you felt like it was like, you know, every time you go to work or even at home that you're constantly having to put out fires. That's what the system of white supremacy is supposed to produce. I think Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., I've heard him say before that we should never expect correct treatment. And people kind of scoffed when he made that statement. And I think that's what he means. Never expecting correct treatment. That's what it means. You're going to constantly be having to, quote unquote, put out fires. They're going to constantly be problems. You're going to constantly be dealing with mistreatment and people not doing things correctly, people violating their own, you know, stated policy and procedure on the job or wherever you happen to. I mean, that's just what the system of white supremacy is supposed to produce. Lots and lots of incorrectness and problems for Black people. And that's why we, you know, have the program to not be stunned about that, just so that we can efficiently go about the business of extinguishing those fires. Moving on to the next problem. I also think in the workplace setting, that's why I've said before, not thinking about Black people on the job. They're not brothers and sisters. If you want to share constructive information, we talked about that earlier. Great. If you want to encourage them to be on time, they might, you know, make sure you get here at 9, not 9:02, not 9 o'clock and 30 seconds. Matter of fact, get here at 8:55. That would be best. If you want to share that, great. But that does not mean that, you know, this is my homie, this is my comrade, that I even think that this person is going to treat me correctly, because that's just not what we have in the system of white supremacy. Yes, they're a victim of racism, white supremacy, but they've probably been conditioned and victimized just like myself and all the other victims, and trained to dislike Black people or whatever it is. Like, we just don't have a system of justice operating. So it's just going to be lots of incorrect things, lots of mistreatment, lots of abuse. It's just going to be widespread. And I just think that's important. And even with regards to you having difficulty sympathizing with some Black people in certain situations, I think under the system of white supremacy, we're not supposed to sympathize with any Black person, even ourselves. So that never surprises me. I think we should just be honest about that, that no, even other Black people, you know, don't sympathize with us. That's the world that we live in. Sometimes I have difficulty sympathizing with Black people, and I see other Black people seem to have difficulty sympathizing with me. That's the world that we're in. I'm still going to try and minimize conflict with them as best I can, especially if we're on the job. And I'm not going to be surprised if they're mistreating me, which is why you want to be about doing things correctly on the job. Regardless, if you're mistreated even by another non-white person, you still want to be about correctness
on the job. But yeah, we're still about minimizing conflict. But yeah, I think just being honest, that's what the system of white supremacy produces, are the black people that go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, I get what you're saying and I do all of that, but I'm just acknowledging that on an emotional level, it is starting to get to me, and I feel like I'm going to snap on the next person the next time, because I've just been going through a lot of stuff with people, and again, just being in a position of management and having to see like this particular new hire that we have has just been nothing but trouble from day one, and I actually have to go home and document all of this stuff after I recently found out that he was trying to threaten to contact corporate on me. And it's just simply because he came in lying about he used to be a manager, and so he had aspirations of being a manager, but we found out that that wasn't true because people was coming in and telling us he was a lot of trouble on his other job, all the stuff that was going on, you know, people that knew him that frequent the store. So, you know, he's bumped heads with several people, gotten into arguments. It's just been total chaos. And then it finally imploded Saturday shortly after, you know, right before I was getting ready to leave with my district manager. And, you know, like I said, I'm just recognizing that my patience with other black folks is not there. And like I said, even with my present living situation, like I'm just tired of hearing all of the excuses and, you know, just being able to just, you know, if that's the case, then I might as well just be the biggest ass on the block to any and everybody and just chalk it up to VGQ. You know, I don't know. You know me. I can certainly understand that.
The frustration that you're doing, that's legitimate. The frustration, whether it's on the job and if you've got someone who has just been a problem, which I think that's what you said, it's just been total chaos. With this black person, new hire coming in, that is certainly legitimate. That's 1,000% valid. And I guess my response would just be, you said you felt like your patience, you didn't have as much patience in that situation, and you felt like you might snap on this person. I guess my response would just be, with regards to what I hope this program is about, it's been my experience that a lot of times black people do, quote unquote, snap on the job, and that creates more problems. And it seems like if this person is already combustible, you snapping on him, that might produce more problems than it solves. And it still might not solve the situation with this individual. And in fact, I guess I would just say, particularly if you are a quote unquote manager, I would just go about the business. If you've seen this person, if it's just total chaos, maybe this was the wrong hire. Maybe this new hire should not have been hired. I would be going about the business as a manager. What needs to happen to see that this person is not working here? If it's this person is that much of a problem and I feel like this is even jeopardizing my ability to be here, that's what I would be going about the business of doing. And it sounds like you're doing some of that with documenting and doing other things to protect yourself. That's, you know, what I would be doing and making sure that I don't snap because that could produce more problems than it solves. But certainly it's not about just saying that he's a victim, he's absolved. Absolutely not. It's about correctness on the job, solving problems regardless of the source. Well, I know the ultimate source, but regardless of who might be participating in causing those problems on the job. Anybody have suggestions for Princess, how she's dealing with this situation, having a really chaos generating new hire who is a black person? Any suggestions causing a lot of frustrations where she's acknowledging her patience has been worn down with this new hire black person? Any suggestions?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if she does meditation or even if she can do something to decompress and just kind of put herself in a more relaxed state, because usually if you can at least try and mitigate the stress off the job as far as that decompression? Because I agree with you as far as documenting everything and taking preemptive moves to make sure you protect yourself, especially in the sense that, he was trying to go to corporate behind your back. You want to document as much as possible just to make sure you protect yourself. But outside of the work arena, is there anything that you like to do that helps you really, really relax, like just really put you in a state of zen where you can maybe kind of recharge your battery, and it'll probably put you in a better state in regards to mitigating the emotions that come with the stuff that this non-white person is doing. Was there anything that you like to do, like to decompress and just kind of de-stress when you are in a highly agitated state?
I try to, but the nature of my job is, I'm out on the floor and I'm engaged with my employees. And so, I try to avoid this individual unless it's business. Like he waits until the store manager leaves and to try and antagonize me and ask me, obvious questions and things that he knows of, almost like he's trying to give me a litmus test or something. And I guess he goes around to different store locations because he's relatives with another employee, just gossiping about stuff going on in the district as if he's worked for the company for years. And like I said, it's kind of hard because of my current situation. Even at home right now, that I'm trying to, like I said, get a hold of. And like I said, once I get to my own place and just be able to decompress, maybe I will be able to get into that. It's been a long process just even trying to get me to get back into my artwork and stuff like that. But it's just been really difficult. And this person has just really, really gone there because he just lies and he just pulls stuff out of his ass just to lie about. And when he's confronted with it, he's only been here for a month and a half, and it's just been insane.
Is there anything in your company manual? I'm sorry.
So G-rated, please. G-rated, please.
Oh, okay. I was asking if there was anything in your company manual that deals with the mitigation of issues similar to the one that you're dealing with. Also, are you the only supervisory staff on the floor after the store manager leaves? So that, in other words, I'm wondering if you actually have to always have direct contact with him, or is there another manager that you share duties with during that time that maybe you can try and let them deal with him, and maybe you go into a different area of the floor where you may not have as much contact with him per se?
Usually it is. It's usually the store manager or the other shift lead that I'm relieving when I come in, because I usually close and do some openings on the weekends. So usually it'll be me and the store manager. And usually, since he's been there, we divvy up the task list for, whoever's on whoever's shift. So I give him his list. I have to be tedious about it to make sure that everything's explicitly explained to him. That way I leave no room for error for him to even come and ask me just the most mundane question. And even with that, it would still turn into, he goes to the other team members to see how many things they have on their list and, complain. He does a lot of complaining. And so, but as far as the employee manual, mainly just making sure that you communicate with the store manager. So I'm trying to be a little bit selective with this new manager, because at the same time, I don't want to appear like I can't handle a situation. But when it's getting to the point where, you know, I am being constantly challenged and antagonized during my shift with this particular person because he has some something off with him, I just, you know, we're trying to do stuff and other team members are complaining about him too, all of which I have documented. And I, the last notation that I gave to my store manager, he passed it on to the assistant store manager to confront the employee with this Saturday, this past Saturday. And that's what erupted into us having a verbal exchange in the office.
Okay, because it sounds like insubordination to me if he's giving you pushback.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is.
Supervisor telling him, giving him tasks to do that are conducive to the company functioning at its optimum, and he's giving you pushback, then that's insubordination right there. Then the other aspect is I've never seen a job where someone can come in and lie about being a supervisor and keep their job. Everybody, and I've been on the job and watched security walk people out when they've lied on any capacity about, you know, on their resume or in their application. If he's saying he was a supervisor elsewhere and it's come to light that he's lying, then that right there, as far as from what I've seen, I don't know if it's written in your manual too, that's grounds for termination right there. You lied. Some people lie and say they had a college degree. But when they, you know, they go back into the person's history and check that college and say, oh, this person was never a student, or oh, this person got kicked out, they never graduated, they get fired. So for him to even walk in, regardless of his aspirations, I've seen people walk in who have no supervisor experience, and because they're good at their job, they end up getting a promotion. But if you're lying, saying that you were a supervisor, and it is exposed that you lied before you got there, that's grounds for termination, too. So I don't know.
I'll check in the employee. Like I said, I haven't had time. I definitely know about insubordination. That's definitely in there. But I'll check that as far as about the lying about the manager, because he's even discussed this with customers coming in. He's even, okay. I've overheard him tell customers that he is a manager currently there at my job.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely grounds for termination. And just one thing I might give you, since I know you said that you're not in the optimal living situation, so it seems like you're getting stress on at work and at home, and that can definitely create kind of a powder keg of stress. One thing that has helped me is a cold water diffuser. And if you can get the right essential oils, there's essential oils you can put in the diffuser that will definitely shift the vibration as far as just getting you to calm down and putting you into a state of relaxation. That is something that has helped me quite a bit. And a cold water diffuser is basically like an electric vaporizer that you can put essential oils in. And the essential oils are therapeutic grade oils that and for all types of plants. So you can use it to clean the air in your home. You can use it to decompress as far as stress. You can put it in your bath water. And it literally does what the creator made these plants to do. And if you are interested in that, I can probably look up, because I have a whole library of oils and books about it. And I can get, you know, a list compiled for you with oils that help with stress and tension. And maybe that can help you both in the interim until you get, you know, your home situation the way you would like it. And then also maybe just help you after the fact as well, just on a daily basis, because it seems like you really have a stressful position. I'm sorry that you have to deal with that. So I'll mute myself, but thank you so much. And hopefully, you know, some of this stuff does help.
Definitely. Normally, I'm a little bit shy for asking for help, but on this one, I will, because a few weeks ago, I had to start taking my second blood pressure. I'm on two blood pressure medicines now.
Oh, wow. I'm so sorry to hear that. I hope you're able to mitigate that, because it seems like he's really doing things that he should have been walked out of there. And I don't know if maybe because he is relatives with someone, I don't know what kind of position that person has, and if they're mitigating him being terminated or him being reprimanded. But the stuff that he's done just sounds like a no-brainer in regards to just basic company policy, insubordination, and straight lying before you even get to the company and get in the company, and lying consistently once you are in the company, saying you're a manager or supervisor. All of that stuff is grounds for being terminated really, really quickly. So I'm hoping you're able to at least mitigate that and get to some place of homeostasis so you can ease back off of that blood pressure, the blood pressure pills, because that stuff is no joke and it's like serious, serious, serious. Also, there's a website called primalherb.com, and they have Chinese Ayurvedic herbs there that you can use in a tea form. And they have ones that specifically deal with blood pressure and the circulatory system, as well as ones that help with the nervous system as well, and ones that deal with stress. That is a site I would recommend because I use their products and they work, and I'm not the only one. So I would just put that out there. It's called primalherb.com. And they have a plethora of information regarding different herbs and the ailments that they cure based on Chinese Ayurvedic medicine. So I would like to toss that out there. And I really, really hope that you get some resolution to this quickly so your health can improve. Thank you. And I'll mute my line.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate that, Ross. No apologies. That is exactly why we have workplace racism. And, you know, I've just said, I am of the belief that you have tens of millions, hundreds of millions of black people who are going through a very similar situation to what Princess is experiencing. Maybe some of them make more or less what she makes, but it's the same type of situation. And where you can even have other non-white people who come in and, you know, get to misbehave in this sort of manner on the job and be insubordinate, as you said. And, hey, no big deal. Just have to tolerate it. You end up tolerating it and end up being super stressed and anxious around all of this. And that can end up having a huge health impact. Again, we talked about Gwen Ifill at the beginning of the year where she passed at 61. It just has a huge impact. You end up losing sleep. I think Emmy was talking about ended up rushing and running around and just being all anxious throughout your day. Just the cost is just enormous. That's why I said I thought it was important. The caller that spoke up earlier about taking time. Sometimes you just need that time to relax and allow your body, your mind, your spirit to recuperate. It is hugely important. And this is just a part of the design of racism, white supremacy. I was also going to say, too, the importance of documentation. This is definitely one of those where I would document. I would want a whole dossier of, it's not just one thing. It's the insubordination and the lying and just everything, because it seems like it's going to be a lot of different incidents. If he's having problems with other employees or whatever it is, I would document as much as possible so that you can go in and, you know, I had to get paper clips for my report. To, you know, make sure that I documented all of his violations of policy and procedure. And I mean, we got some major problems here that shows that this might not be someone who's going to fit into the type of culture that we want here so that we can have great, outstanding sales and get our job done in a correct manner. Yeah, I would document. And if you keep my recorder handy, I don't know if you have one, but if you do, I would keep it handy. If he's out and about and you hear any of the lying, telling customers he's a manager or anything else that, you know, would be good to document that way. Even if it's not, you're in a state where you can't do that, you can at least write it down and you'll be able to write it down exactly date, time, everything, that this is what was said. This is who he was talking to. All of that. Just document. That makes your case as strong as possible when you want to go and talk and, you know, review this employee and what to do moving forward. Do we have any other folks, either suggestions, Princess's situation, or if you had your any other commentary you wanted to share as we're winding down in the broadcast? Anybody else have commentary they wanted to get in?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Retired firefighter.
Yes. Was this problem employee a non-white person?
Black male, I believe she said. Black male.
Black male.
Yes, I would just say that, you know, this is a This is a very common situation. A lot of times, I don't know if anybody said it, a lot of times the white people will allow that to go on because it makes it easier for them if they got just two black people, excuse me, fighting with one another. I'm not saying you're fighting with this person, but that's how they look at it. You know, the two white people fighting, and it like gives them a break on that. And really, they really don't care on which one, quote unquote, wins out as far as they're concerned. Just eliminate one of them out of the process. I've seen that over and over again as far as they're concerned. Very, very similar situations. As I think Gus may have suggested, expected, especially in the workplace. White people are very crafty into pitting non-white people, especially non-white black people. It makes it even much more easy when the non-white person is another black person. Pitting non-white black people against one another to have them arguing or fighting, or as this particular employee's situation is doing all kinds of shenanigans. I'm going to use the word that you used on a daily basis. I think I know what you're talking about, you know, as far as, and it does make a stress situation, but what you're going to have to do, you're going to have to work very hard at relieving yourself from that stress, because it's going to corrupt your personal health in a much more drastic fashion. I know I have on my job went to other people's jobs. That was some of the most frequent calls, emergency calls that we would go on would be on somebody's job. And of course the employee a lot of times would be another non-white person, a non-white black person. And I'm pretty sure it's for similar reasons, stress, you know, that sort of thing. So you're going to have to really work at that. And the first thing is to expect it. When you expect it, automatically it's something that I can't explain that goes on in the brain. They kind of like, you know, when you expect something happens, it's actually some level of relieving, you know, relieving the stress and whatnot when you expect something to happen. But when someone just, you know, kind of like something attacks you and you're not expecting it or not aware of it, then it probably would be much more of a more severe type of mental or physical health wise negative situation going on. And hopefully I said something that would be considered to be informative. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter. Absolutely. I think that's another thing I try to emphasize as well. I too think it makes a substantial difference when you are expecting these types of things to happen, expecting it and prepared for it. I think that can help a lot in terms of mitigating being so angry about it and it being as stressful. It's still going to be bothersome, but I think it can minimize how stressful it is just when you are prepped, regardless of what it is, if this person is going to say something or do something and how you're going to respond to it. I think that can be very, very helpful in minimizing it. So you don't feel as compelled to snap in responding. We have any other folks who had commentary they wanted to make sure we get in last few moments before we wrap things up?
Yes, actually, Emily reminded me of an experience I had when I worked at Comcast, and I was there for like 6 years, and the department I was in was run sadly by three non-white people, all female, all black. One is a Spanish-speaking black person. Most people would call a Latino, but I don't use that term. And it got to be really bad before they closed our department and laid us off, as far as just the anti-blackness from all three of them, including the department head. And at one point, I just started to I took a completely opposite behavior pattern. There were two entrances to my department, one where I would pass my immediate supervisor's desk, who used to just be so anti-black, it was just nauseating, and very aggressive for a female, just aggressive, I would say quite street in the way that she talked at times, and it was just intolerable for me. So what I started doing was, I would actually take the long way. I would pass that door that immediately would put me closer to my desk, but I would have to pass her, and I would go all the way around the long way and come in from the opposite side. And the vast majority of the time, she didn't even know I was at work until lunchtime. And she would just be like, oh, Ross, I didn't even know you were here today. And I would just be like, yeah, I was here. You know, just kind of, you know, quiet, doing my thing, and keep it moving. And what I found was the less that she actually saw me, the less contact that I had with her, unless it was absolutely necessary or a company mandated thing, if we had like a monthly meeting about our numbers, things like that. But outside of that context, she half the time didn't know I was physically present. And I would do my best to make sure that she didn't know I was present, as far as just always taking that other route. And I was very quiet. I would be friendly and cordial with folks, but I just started being really, really quiet. And that kind of helped me until eventually, as I previously predicted, they would close the department, which they did. Something else, too, is on Black Talk Radio, there's a host named, a show named Tando. And somebody brought up on this program a couple of weeks ago about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. And there's a crowdfunding campaign that's going on where you can actually invest in Bitcoin at a very low price and make a lot of money in Bitcoin. And it's something that I think we should really be thinking about, because they're planning to collapse the economy with the dollar. And one of the things they're going to do to resurrect the economy is move towards cryptocurrency, so they have control over taxing people. But ultimately, Bitcoin just hit a milestone of like 7,000. Last I saw, it was just above 7,000 for one Bitcoin. They're predicting it's going to go to 10,000 for one Bitcoin before the end of the year. So you can come in low at an extremely affordable price, but accumulate Bitcoin, and it's poised to go extremely much higher than 10,000 per Bitcoin. So if anyone is interested in it, we have had calls, conference calls where people can call in if you want to learn more about it. And if you want to, please get in touch with me through Gus, and I'll, you know, give you as much information as possible. And also, once we get the next call set up, I'll let you know. It's something I'm personally involved in and have been for a minute. And Dave is just really good at what he does, and it can potentially help liberate you financially from having to work for anyone else. If you make the small investment, and it'll grow practically on its own. But it's something that I'm personally invested in, have been for a little while, and it's something that can be life-altering, financially speaking, and at least in that aspect of the system, you might have less contact with white people if you don't have to work for someone, because you have money that puts you in a position where you don't have to work for someone anymore. So I just wanted to toss that out there. Thanks again, and I'll mute my line.
Great, great. Know some other folks, think we've had some listeners as well that just were talking about that as well. Be great. Invest. Check that out. Get in contact with Mr. Roz and Tando Radio. Outstanding. Need more economics, financial literacy. Other folks, anything else? Folks wanted to make sure they got in. Be satisfied? Got everybody? We'll assume we nabbed everyone.
I did not know he was a former Comcast employee.
Oh, I didn't know if you were speaking with someone else or not. We should be here tomorrow for the book club. I think it was already referenced. Crazy Talk, Stupid Talk, Neil Postman's text, Use of Words. Talked about that a lot this evening. We'll be finishing that book tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Last time on Mr. Postman's work. Next week, we will be moving the new book, Kevin Dutton's The Wisdom of Psychopaths. We've been talking about that book for years. It was supposed to be on the book club. Dr. Rasayan was the first person to reference that book years ago. And for whatever reason, we just never got around to doing it. We'll start that next Friday. But tomorrow, we'll wrap up Crazy Talk, Stupid Talk by Neil Postman. Saturday, we'll be here for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. If you have questions, gripes, complaints, guest suggestions, feel free. Drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Much obliged to all the folks for tuning in. I hope it was worthy of your time and energy. The caller at 2960, did we miss you completely, or did you have commentary that you were going to share? The caller at 2960?
No, I was just saying that I didn't know that he was a former Comcast employee, because I used to work for Comcast myself. So,
oh.
And just thanks for the advice from everybody, and hopefully I can get this issue resolved.
Absolutely. Give us the update. I guess it might take some time, but feel free to give us an update on how things progress and how you're able to resolve the issue. Document. I think that would be best. If other folks have commentary, again, you can drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we'll share on the air. With that, thanks again. And I would encourage, sobriety would be best, particularly with all the nutty Christmas parties and antics that are coming up in the few days, weeks. Sobriety would be bad. And I would make that clear, like, in advance. I don't drink. Make up whatever narrative you need to go with that. But as long as the essential is, I am all about sobriety. So, no, I don't do that. I don't hang out at the bar. And, you know, I'm not interested in that scene at all. Get that message out well in advance of any of the holiday shenanigans before they encroach. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.